everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about SmackDown, which usually is a chore, but this week is not, funnily enough, by Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. I cannot tell you how happy I am that we had a good week in wrestling. Raw was really good. SmackDown was pretty good. I am, like, slightly afraid that NXT is going to suck tonight, but from everything I've heard from you, NXT is not going to suck anytime soon. And I appreciate that you haven't told me any details, just you will like it. It's been a good week in wrestling. I feel like there's not so much rage. Normally I open the show and I'm like, I had to watch SmackDown and it was the worst thing because SmackDown, it wasn't awful. It was actually really good. I liked a lot of stuff on SmackDown, Kenny. It's very refreshing. I'm not used to this.
It's interesting because I feel like this year's WrestleMania card is kind of miles better than last year's WrestleMania card, yet there are far more complaints about this year's card.
Yeah, it's interesting. Me. Do you think... One of the reasons I think that there are complaints this year is that the stories are not done being told. I think we're still very much building stories, and I think people by now are used to having the WrestleMania card solid, set in stone, and everything's well on its way because we're, what, 25 days away from Mania or something? So everyone's like, no, we should have the stories entirely told. But I like the fact that we're ramping up to WrestleMania and we don't know everything that's going to happen. I like the fact that stories are still in play. But that's the kind of wrestling fan I am, you know, like I'm not the kind of person who likes to do loads of fantasy booking or, you know, I don't even like making predictions because I'm like, I don't know. We'll see what they tell me. I don't want to put that much like forethought into it. I just like watching the show as it goes. So.
Yes, I guess that is kind of it. But we're going to get into SmackDown, but this is going to be a longer episode of the SmackDown Summary than you're used to. But that's because Sondra went to Raw on Monday night in Detroit.
I did. It was so much fun.
The Motor City. So you went to Raw. Tell us a little bit about who you went with and just kind of maybe your thoughts going into it. It's the night after Fastlane. I guess people thought this was maybe where things were going to amp up a little bit. On the road to WrestleMania, there's always a road, Sondra.
There's always a road. There's especially in the Motor City, right? So I went to Raw. Mr. Sondra had to work, so I took a coworker of mine, a friend, and his name's Daniel, and he had never seen wrestling before. Like, on the drive to Raw, I was like, okay, so how much do you know about wrestling? Because he's heard me talk about it a little bit, but, like, I don't chat wrestling with him that much because he isn't into it. But he was kind of like, no, I'd be really interested to see it because I know that you're really passionate about it, and he knows that, you know, I do this podcast, and he actually listened to one of the episodes just to see kind of what I did, you know, and he was like, no, it sounds like something you're really passionate about, I'll go with you. And so I asked him on the car drive over to Detroit, which is about 2.5 hours, and I was like, so how much have you ever heard of wrestling, or how much do you know? He's like, I know nothing. And I was like, so do you know who Brock Lesnar is? Do you know who Ronda Rousey is? And he just was like, no, I have no idea. So he had no clue going in, which was interesting because I was like, well, Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey are supposed to be there, and that's a big deal, trust me. I think one of the compliments I can give Raw as an episode is that Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey obviously did not show, and I didn't really miss them because there was so much else going on. But, I mean, even the opening segment of Raw where, you know, Kurt Angle comes out and is like, Brock Lesnar's not here and Paul Heyman's not here, and I thought it was really ballsy of them to do that twice, to announce Brock Lesnar twice and then not have him appear on the show. That's not something I expected. I expected him to actually be there. I wasn't mad.
Was there a vibe from anybody in the crowd that you saw, or anyone who, was anybody pissed that Lesnar and Rousey were not there? Did anybody seem to be that bothered?
I don't think anyone... I didn't notice a vibe about Rousey so much. Where we were sitting was kind of like... It was very casual fans, like some people who like worked for the arena, I think, were sitting near us because they kept talking to the security guy and they didn't really seem to know what was going on. And they were also really drunk. But I didn't get a vibe that people were super pissed. But I mean, when Kurt Angle came out and announced that Brock Lesnar wasn't there, there were definite boos for sure. And I was a little surprised that I wasn't surprised that people booed Roman as much as they did, because obviously they were booing Roman. And explaining all of this to someone who's never seen wrestling before was just really interesting. I'm like, no, trust me, this is a big deal. You have to go with it. But Yeah, it seemed like there was definitely a vibe of like, oh, they didn't show up. That's interesting. Well, because we didn't know until I think after the Ronda Rousey video package was kind of when it clicked for me that she wasn't there, right? Because they didn't make any announcement that she wasn't there or anything. It's just she never came out. And I don't think the crowd really noticed that as much.
So Ryan Satin reported about apparently she was in Pittsburgh doing testing and that's why she wasn't there. But it wasn't like she just no-showed, and she is going to be on all the Raws after this, I think.
I don't remember. Was it just a report, like, in the news that Ronda Rousey was going to be on every Raw going forward, or was that...
WWE reported it.
WWE reported that, right? So, I mean, that's
And then they took it down.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a stupid move for them to say she's going to be on every episode of Raw, and then she clearly wasn't on this episode of Raw. She was just in a video package on Raw. I didn't really miss her on the show because I think, you know, like I said, there was so much else going on.
So if you go and see a wrestling show and, you know, you've bought a ticket and you go and blah, 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 blah. Like, if Lesnar and Rousey, because part of what you were excited about was Rousey and Lesnar being there.
Yeah, that was something I was really looking forward to seeing.
And then they're not there. Did it harm your enjoyment when you realized they weren't going to be there, or were you just immediately kind of like, yeah, fuck it, who cares? Let's see what else they've got.
For me, I was like, fuck it, let's see what else they've got. Especially because, well, and like I said, I didn't realize that Rousey wasn't going to be there until much later in the show when stuff was already happening, and I was already
you had an idea Lesnar was not going to be there. I think
I did have an idea that Lesnar was not going to be there, especially when, you know, Kurt Angle opened the show and said that Lesnar was not going to be there. I have no idea how else I could have known that. But yeah, so, I mean, right from the get-go, when I realized that Lesnar wasn't going to be there, I was like, that's a ballsy move. And that's really interesting. And honestly, for me, seeing Brock Lesnar is exciting, and seeing Paul Heyman is exciting, and it would have been fun to hear Paul Heyman cut a promo live. I mean, I'm going to hear Paul Heyman speak live in New Orleans on WrestleMania weekend. You can go to insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets for that.
I did a new thing, actually, because Paul Heyman's going to be doing some local radio and stuff leading up to New Orleans. Ooh. To promote the show, and I realized that a .co.uk email address, website is probably not the way to go, so now... We've also taken over paulheymanlive.com.
Ooh, that's exciting.
So paulheymanlive.com will take you to all your ticket information that you need.
Excellent. See, I didn't know about this.
You were too busy gallivanting at Raw?
I was too busy gallivanting at Raw to know that we, you know, had another
by the way,
website option.
I'm not even kidding. I know this really, we shouldn't really be talking about this on air. Have you heard about Still Game?
What about Still Game?
Somebody dies on tomorrow's show.
I know, and I'm really, really nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know who it's going to be, and I'm really nervous, and I'm going to have to just stay off Twitter for... Why are we talking about Still Game? But I'm so nervous.
Came off my mind. Anyway, sorry.
No, for anyone who is not a huge fan of the Scottish sitcom Still Game, this is a big deal. Like, I'm really, really nervous about who's going to die, and... Yeah. It's a very emotional week for me. But this has gotten off the rails. Yes, I would have really liked to hear Paul Heyman speak, but I think the story they're telling by not having Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar at the arena in Detroit outweighs my wanting to see Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar live. And I think it's just a really interesting move, and it got me really super behind Roman Reigns. That was another thing that was interesting, was explaining to my friend, like, so this is the guy that they want to be the top guy and the top, like, main star, and everybody hates him, and it's a really interesting dynamic. And when Roman Reigns came out, obviously the arena erupted with, you know, crazy boos, and there were some people cheering him too. I was cheering Roman Reigns. I was on Monday. I've come to the point where I really like Roman Reigns. I think he's an incredibly good professional wrestler, and he's kind of a prick, right? Like, his character is definitely a dickhead who's a terrible friend. But when it comes to Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, I think they're telling the story so, so well of Brock Lesnar being entitled and Roman Reigns being like, hey, I'm here every week. And even though, like, I did listen to part of the Raw Rundown, and I heard David's criticism of this opening segment and how it didn't work for him at all. And I feel like sometimes David and I watch wrestling and we're just watching completely different shows, because this opening segment worked for me so perfectly. Like,
so talk a lot, because I was going to ask you about that, because there was some things in Raw that David really liked and some things that he really didn't like. And one of the things was the opening segment. And I think that if you watch wrestling in the kind of way that a lot of people, I guess, who listen to this kind of podcast or watch shoot interviews and all that kind of thing, in the way that they consume wrestling, I do understand why it kind of doesn't make sense that, you know, Lesnar's Vince's boy, not Roman's, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, from my point of view, I just kind of like when things go a little bit bonkers.
This like, that's like something chaos. That I enjoy.
So, yeah, but so I'm curious about what you mean by, because you and David, you know, find out all the same kind of information.
We do.
So it's not like you, so how do you and him view it differently, do you think? What does he see and what do you see?
Well, I'm not sure. I think maybe just because he was looking at it from the perspective of, well, clearly Roman is the chosen one, and we know that backstage, that seems to be why it didn't work for David, was because he just didn't believe anything that Roman was saying. But for me, when I look at it, it's like, yeah, Roman is the chosen one, and he is Vince's boy, and we do know that. But in the moment, and some of that has to do with being in the arena live, and also, I think watching the show with someone who didn't know what was going on and who was watching it with fresh eyes, like my friend, you kind of put a lot of that cynicism to the side and you just kind of like watch the show and get involved in it and get wrapped up in it. And that was refreshing to me, was just to be like,
What did your friend think when this was, because I'm baffled by, if he's not really watched wrestling, like, because this kind of, did it all go over his head? How did you explain it to him?
He was really into it. He was just kind of like, well, and part of the problem was that when Vince McMahon was talking and said that Roman was suspended, and, you know, after that, like after Roman went to confront Vince, and I had to explain that that was a big deal too, because I'm like, Vince isn't on screen very often and he owns the company, and this is crazy because it feels like he's going kind of off script, because I had explained in the car ride over, like, you know, everything you hear them say is going to be pretty scripted, and it's kind of like a television show in that way. And there's obviously a lot of drama and stuff. And so my friend was just kind of like, this feels like it's a really big deal. Like, everyone's reacting. And I was like, yeah, this is a really big deal that Roman's going backstage to look for Vince McMahon. Like, that's not something that I expected. And then
When Roman brought Vince up, and because when I was watching it, I remember when he said, you know, Lesnar's Vince's boy, I did the noise that, you know, when you've got me, when I go, ho, ho.
And that's exactly what I was doing too. I was like, oh my gosh, holy shit, he just said that. And the thing is, even though Roman is the chosen one, I think this is where I was going earlier and I tangented, but Brock Lesnar is also super fucking protected and gets away with whatever he wants, which is why I think Roman's promo works for me, is that on that level, he is not wrong. Like, Brock Lesnar does kind of show up when he wants. He gets paid a lot of money to do not a lot of dates. He's not doing a bunch of house shows. I mean, I know he's done some house shows, but, he, you know, like, Roman's kind of telling the truth. Like, Brock Lesnar is this cash cow for Vince McMahon who kind of gets special treatment. He's on a different deal than everyone else. So I guess for me, it just kind of worked.
And I think I do think that, to give David's comments some credence, I don't think he's wrong in that there are problems with the story.
Oh, and there
and but then I'm more with you, because when I was watching it, I was like, when Roman started walking up the ramp, and I don't know if you thought this as well, or people listening, when he started walking up the ramp, something in my gut said, he's going to confront Vince at Gorilla. Like, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah. Because he was clearly going back to find him.
And as soon as it was there, and like, and again, this goes back to, you know, I was listening to PW Torch, and I've interviewed Wade Keller before. I do respect him, but I was listening to him and Travis Bryant, and I was just, I don't know how you can listen to their podcast and remain a wrestling fan, because I'm trying to be careful. I don't think you should just watch wrestling and automatically give everything a pass. That's not what I'm saying.
No, which clearly we don't do. I mean, here on the SmackDown summary, you've heard us complain quite a bit.
Yeah, but I think that you would want to go into it wanting to enjoy it. And I think that it feels like with them, that, you know, like, so Wade Keller was like, oh, you know, you were Shane McMahon's there and they're doing that just to give you the vibe that it's behind the scenes. It's like, well, yeah, because that's the point. That's why they've got Shane there. It makes sense. adds a layer to it.
Well, and that's something I actually explained to my friend. I was like, oh, and that's really interesting too, because, you know, that's Vince McMahon, but Shane, his son, actually works on SmackDown. So he's not normally on Raw. So this makes it feel like it's chaotic and, you know, all this stuff. And I thought that was kind of a cool detail, actually. It's like when you see Road Dogg backstage, or, you know, Michael Hayes sitting there in his fanny pack or whatever. All that kind of stuff. It makes it feel more chaotic and more bonkers, which I think is what worked about the opening segment for me. And I understand if people, like, I haven't read a lot of reactions to Raw because I was, you know, I was there. I was not looking at Twitter. I was watching the show. But I guess I can see where maybe people are put off by them trying to make Roman Reigns into Stone Cold Steve Austin. But I didn't even really get that they were making him into Stone Cold Steve Austin. This felt very different to the confrontations that we're seeing between Steve Austin and Vince McMahon on Retro Raw.
But that's such a blasé reference now. Everybody, you know, oh, Roman Reigns is Steve Austin, Braun Strowman is Steve Austin. It's like, so it means anybody who is anti-authority is Stone Cold Steve Austin? Well, everybody should be anti-authority because the authority are dicks.
Yeah, exactly. So I just got that Roman was anti-authority here. He was anti the person in charge, but it was a very different vibe to me than Steve Austin. I don't think that they're trying to make Roman Reigns into Steve Austin. They know WWE is smart enough at this point to know that Roman Reigns is not going to get the reaction of Steve Austin, right? Like, they understand that Roman gets booed a lot, but he does get a reaction. And, you know, whether that's good for storytelling or bad for storytelling, in this moment, in this promo and in the arena, it definitely worked for me and I was cheering for him.
Yeah, I enjoyed it for the chaos. And then obviously Vince, now you guys didn't really hear Vince's
We couldn't
interview,
at
right?
all. Like, we could see Vince on the screen and you could hear mumbling and I would catch a few words every once in a while, but we couldn't really hear what Vince was saying. And I was like, he seems mad at Roman, I think. And then the crowd started chanting, "We can't hear you, clap, 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 we can't hear you," because we couldn't hear anything. And they kind of turned up the volume by the end, so I did hear, like, Roman Reigns has been suspended for the rest of the day, or was he indefinitely suspended, or was he just suspended for the day?
Temporarily suspended.
Temporarily suspended, okay. So, I mean, that is the definition of suspension, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea that it's all a bit nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
I
mean,
I don't think that Roman Reigns is going to become some sort of mad babyface out of it. But I do think, though, that my preference would be that you don't put this on last at WrestleMania, because I actually, if you put it on fourth or fifth from the top, it'll actually be really fun and people might get behind it. Yeah, you know, because you theoretically could put, I mean, AJ Nakamura and Charlotte and Asuka is probably less so, but, you know, put them there as backups. But Undertaker, Cena, and the mixed tag are also options to put on last.
I wouldn't want Undertaker, Cena on last. I think that needs to go in the middle of the card and it needs to not be long. We'll get more into Undertaker, Cena in a bit. But I think
the thing you need to not do over everything else is do not have the show close with Roman Reigns dethroning Brock Lesnar. That's the worst option, because even if Undertaker beats John Cena, or John Cena beats Undertaker, or Ronda and Kurt beat Triple H and Stephanie, or Nakamura and AJ, any of those combinations, and some people might like some more than others, it is what it is. Whereas Roman Reigns, for the fourth year in a row being in the main event, and for the third year in a row being the anointed one, is just going to piss people off. So I don't know why you would do that, but they will probably put it on last.
I think that you're not wrong. I think that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar feels like it should be the main event to me. But I think for the reasons that you're saying, I totally understand why you wouldn't want it to be the main event, because ending another WrestleMania with Roman Reigns victorious, it's not something that I'm opposed to at this point. Like I said, I've become an actual Roman Reigns fan and I'm okay with that. I've accepted it. I had a moment of, you know, self-discovery. I needed to come to terms with the fact that I really fucking like Roman Reigns now, okay? And it was difficult, but I really, really like Roman Reigns now. So it is what it is. I enjoy him as a wrestler, and it shouldn't be this painful to enjoy someone as a wrestler and so problematic. And it's like, because I feel like a lot of the discussions about Roman Reigns and having him shoved down our throats, it's like, but he's really good now. So now I kind of really want to see him. But I mean, I understand that WrestleMania ending moment, probably it could be tarnished just by the reaction of everyone who isn't so on board with Roman Reigns, the people who are still definitely booing Roman Reigns. You know what? Give it to Charlotte and Asuka. Have Asuka victorious at the end of WrestleMania. How cool would that be?
Yeah, you could do Asuka, you could do Nakamura, you could do AJ, you can do Cena, you can do Anderson, you can do any of them that you want to do. You just, if you do Roman, it is, I think if it goes, it shouldn't really matter this much, but I think if that goes on like 3 or 4 from the top, I think it would get a better reaction. I do. I think it would just be like, people would be like, oh, cool. All right.
Will it next. Or will it kill the rest of the show for people?
I don't think so. I don't think anybody would see Brock and Roman. I don't think Brock and Roman feels like the main event at all. It feels like, because the whole idea is that everyone thinks Brock's leaving. Most people don't really want Roman to be the guy. So the story they're telling means that whatever outcome you do, it's almost like if you'd put Goldberg and Lesnar on last year, it probably just wouldn't have been. I'm just saying, for Roman to have a fighting chance, which I don't really think he does, whatever you do, but that's
I don't know. I just wonder if, because Roman Reigns is beating Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Like, that's what's happening, right?
The other thing is, though, if you put the mixed tag on as the main event, which I'm not opposed to, everybody is going to, well, not everybody, the minority internet wrestling fan, and I don't mean that as a negative, I just mean it as the truth, will see it as, oh my god, the first ever women to main event WrestleMania, it's fucking Stephanie. That will be the response, which I understand, but I don't really care. As long as Ronda kills her, fine. But yes.
Well, see, I guess my thing with not putting Roman on last is if Roman wins the title from Brock Lesnar, I think they might worry about the backlash and that harming the rest of the show because people will just be raging that Roman's the champion. I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't think
anybody's going into that is going to be shocked when he beats him. Mm-mm. And also, I don't think that they care about Brock Lesnar in the same way, given how they're booking him, because they're booking you to dislike him. That it's not like Roman Reigns is going to be going in there and, like, the thing with Undertaker last year is they kind of had to go on last, because if he was potentially retired in someone, it would be hard to come back from that. But it'll be interesting to see what they do. Anyway, I want to ask you about two other big things and then kind of finish of Raw of other bits and pieces that you want to talk about. But the John Cena promo that happened on Raw. Talk me through your thoughts before he came out, as he came out, the promo itself, the different parts to it, what your friend thought. Break it down for us, as your good old friends D-Generation X would say.
Let's not bring them into this. So the John Cena dynamic is another one that's really difficult to explain to someone who hasn't watched wrestling, right? Because as we were going through the show, you know, the Bonkers opening segment happened, and then I think we had Sonya Deville versus Sasha Banks, and Daniel was like, I'm super into Sasha Banks. She is hot as fuck, and she looks like a badass, and I would be afraid that she would murder me, but she's awesome. And I was like, yep, and I'm pretty in love with Sonya Deville because I have a big old crush on her. So we enjoyed that match. I mean, like, he was super into Akira Tozawa diving through the ropes and was like, oh, they do this? This is really cool. So we were having a good time watching the wrestling show. And then, you know, it gets to the point of John Cena. And you know how contentious I've been about John Cena lately. Like, we've had these discussions on the SmackDown summary. I do not like John Cena's story going into this. I think he is an entitled prick who can just move between shows. His whole I don't have a road to WrestleMania thing is just bullshit to me. This is what I was thinking going in. And, you know, trying to distill that into an easy explanation is kind of difficult. And I was just like, so I'm not really into John Cena. I don't really like what he's been doing leading up to this. He gets a very divisive reaction. A lot of people love him. A lot of people hate him. You will hear some people cheering. You will hear a lot of people booing. John Cena's music hit. And Daniel was like, do I clap? Do I not? I don't know what to do, because like a bunch of other people around us were cheering and I was booing. And he was just like, wrestling's so weird, but this is really fun. And so Cena came out and, you know, he started being his normal hokey Cena self. And then, you know, talking about how he doesn't have a road to WrestleMania. And I was like, that's fucking bullshit, whatever. And then he was saying that he wasn't going to be on WrestleMania. And I just kind of rolled my eyes and was like, of course you're going to be on WrestleMania. You're John Cena. And then he started doing his whole thing where John Cena is a master of crowd manipulation and started going into the crowd and saying, you know, I'm going to go to WrestleMania as a fan. Maybe I'll be over here. And then he goes into the crowd and hangs out with someone and takes a sip of someone's drink and is fun. And it's like, okay, I understand how you're endearing and likable in this scenario. This is kind of great. And then when he got back in the ring and called out The Undertaker, like, I was on edge the whole time, like, waiting for a gong, because I was like, I don't want to hear the gong. because I feel like that version of The Undertaker should be gone. And also, I don't really have much interest in seeing The Undertaker still. So, yeah, like, but John Cena won me around. Like, when he said, you know, and, you know, maybe my other road to WrestleMania, I don't remember how exactly he worded it, but when he looked straight into what I assume was the camera, he was looking kind of like straight at where I was facing and was like, "I challenge The Undertaker at WrestleMania." And I was like, "Oh shit." Like, I got goosebumps and I was just like, "Damn it, now I'm into this." And because I explained to my friend, I was like, "The Undertaker is one of the most respected people in all of wrestling, probably the greatest original character in WWE, one of the most respected in the locker room. He's been around for fucking ever. He's been around since 1990. Like, he is an institution in WWE, right?" And that's how I describe The Undertaker for everyone who thinks that I just hate him and whatever. Like, I respect.
Also, people listen to Retro Raw the last 2 weeks where you have given the show thumbs up.
I have.
Partly based on segments he was involved in. So,
I mean, he's being involved in teleportation and wrestling. I can't hate that, you know? Like,
I did say to David at one point when we were talking about the, you know, the segment, and I said, "David, Sondra was into this." That is the barometer of if you can get somebody into something. Anyway, sorry, continue.
But no, it's John Cena totally won me around when he very seriously, because I haven't liked hokey, jokey John Cena who's like, "What am I going to do at WrestleMania?" Da-da-da-da-da. When he got serious and when he just challenged The Undertaker straight up, and then when he started calling The Undertaker a broken down old man, when he started saying that The Undertaker doesn't belong here, when he started, you know.
So what Cena said was, he said he was going to challenge The Undertaker a couple of times, and then he said, you know, the only person responsible for this match not happening is The Undertaker. And then he said, get over yourself, get over your ego. When I lose, I pick myself up. When I fail, I pick myself up and move on. Whereas you hide your head in the sand because you're so ashamed and embarrassed at what people are going to say about you. Stop hiding behind your lame excuses. You're not too old. You're not washed up. You're not broken down. And if you were broken down, you wouldn't be posting workout videos on your wife's Instagram. The only person stopping this match from happening is you, you self-centered, conceited egomaniac. The ball's in your court, dead man. Time to see if you're still alive. If I were you, I know what I would do. I would want one more match. And, mic drop is the appropriate term to what he did.
And for him to say that about The Undertaker, like to call out The Undertaker's ego and to, you know, mention Michelle McCool's Instagram and all that kind of stuff. Like, even my friend that I was with was like, "Oh, this seems very heated. This seems like something you do not say." And I was like, "Trust me, this is something people do not say about The Undertaker," because The Undertaker always has this mystique about him, right? And he's always been behind this like shroud of character. And this felt like John Cena getting real with The Undertaker, the guy who left his hat and gloves and facade potentially in the ring last year. So all of a sudden, there's the start to a story. Is it a match that I think is going to be amazing? Probably not. But is it something that I kind of wanted to see in that moment? Yeah. Like, I kind of wanted to see The Undertaker answer. I want to see what The Undertaker has to say. I hope he doesn't respond via text message this time. Was it Sting that did that, or was it The Undertaker that was like,
It was Sting. I don't think The Undertaker accepted via text message.
Okay.
Although I would love to see him do it.
I think he accepted via, like, lightning or something for Bray Wyatt, but the less said about that, the better.
Oh, God, I know. Well, so, do you know, so yeah, overall, I mean, I guess, because do you think, and we, you know, I've been sent down this rabbit hole before, it feels like this is different to the usual build to an Undertaker match. Like, nobody's ever came out and said this kind of stuff about him before.
No, this was new. And this was something that felt like only John Cena could get away with this. And maybe that's part of what works about the story, right? Is that John Cena's John Cena. He's also an institution in WWE. He hasn't been around as long as The Undertaker, but he is the guy, right? And so for him to say that kind of stuff about someone who is so revered and so respected and to basically just like call him out as a human man, I found really interesting, because this promo humanized The Undertaker for me anyway.
Well, because the other part of it, today, I've had discussions with, I would say, probably over 50 people about this match, because I'd put a tweet out about it and then people were telling me whether they liked it or whether they didn't, and why. And I like to hear why people aren't liking it or do or whatever. And one of the things that I was trying to say to some people was, but so because the story, one of the reasons that a lot of people who are vocal about not wanting to see the match, the reason is they say, well, the match last year was bad. He can't wrestle anymore. He's terrible. That's kind of the argument, right?
Mm-hmm. And I was firmly in that camp.
But then my point is, but they're bringing that into the story.
Exactly. And I think because that's what works about it for me now.
Because they're now saying, like, they're bringing in that people think he's broken down. And, I mean, I don't think that Cena can do that promo. I mean, I don't want to give them too much credit, but I don't think that Cena can do that promo and then we can just have Gong rest in peace accept. It would feel just completely, it would feel like two different people. It wouldn't feel like the same thing. So I almost feel like they're going to, yeah, I think you're right. It's humanized them a little bit. So I put a poll out on Twitter and Facebook. And on Facebook, we got like 150 responses. On Twitter, we got, let me just see where we are right now on that one. 1,250. So on Twitter, the choices were, you know, simplifying it. Cena's called him out. Refs have broken down. Crowd seemed to like it. Do you want to see the match at WrestleMania? 12% say no, they can't convince me. But 88% say yes, giving it a chance. And then on Facebook, 19 people say no, not interested. 54 say maybe, I wasn't keen, but they could win me over. And then 100 have said, yes, I want to see it. So it feels like people are, for the most part, giving it a chance. So where do you sit now after, you know, Undertaker kind of ruined a couple of years of WrestleMania for you?
Kind of ruined a couple of years of WrestleMania for me, yes.
And then really John, and then John Cena being kind of terrible in the last 12 months. So on paper, you should absolutely hate every single bit of these two having a match.
But
where do you sit right now after the promo about it right now?
I mean, in the moment right after the promo, I was like, fuck it, I want to see this. I want to see The Undertaker respond to John Cena. I almost want to see the build more than I want to see the actual match, I think is where I'm at right now. I want to see how The Undertaker responds to John Cena. And you know, the other thing that I think worked about this for me is that the whole story being that John Cena, you know, like the disconnect, I guess, for me with John Cena saying, like, I don't have a road to WrestleMania. I might not get on WrestleMania. And yet he has the clout to go between shows and like, oh, so I failed on Raw. I can just go over to SmackDown. This feels like John Cena owning that part of the story because he's like, fuck it. You know what? I'm going to just go off script and do what I want to. I mean, obviously, we know it's on script, but he's saying, I'm going to go off script. I'm going to just do what I want to do because I'm John Cena, and I'm going to call out The Undertaker even though I'm not supposed to. And I think him owning that whole, like, fuck it, I can do what I want aspect of John Cena is when John Cena is most effective to me because he's not pretending that he doesn't have the clout to do whatever he wants in WWE. He's just kind of like, I'm John Cena, and we all accept that, and we know it. And then, I mean, bringing the human factor of The Undertaker into the story as well, it really works. And now I kind of want to see it. I still am on the fence about whether the match is going to be any good. I think it should not be a long match. I think it should, you know, have a lot of probably bells and whistles.
But then, I mean, do you think that, like, Cena can have a good match when he wants to?
He can.
But the problem is Cena's going to have, it's going to rely on Cena more here than it has in a long time.
And it'll like depend on, I mean, I know that The Undertaker had hip surgery, which it seems like he looks, from Michelle McCool's Instagram, like he looks to be in very good shape, but looking to be in very good shape and moving around fine, like walking at public appearances, is very different to having a wrestling match. And so I think that'll just be the test of, can The Undertaker look okay enough in a match to make this work for people? And that's something that I don't know. Like, it's,
do you think that they bring in during the match him being broken down?
I think they absolutely should. And I know a lot of people on Twitter have been saying the only way this works is if Undertaker wins and John Cena lays down for him. I still kind of want to see John Cena beat The Undertaker, and I know that that's not going to be popular at all, but I think that maybe that is the story. Maybe he tries his best, and he's an old man now, and maybe he should lose.
I think that, like, it's really problematic to go into a wrestling match basically saying, I'm not saying you're saying this, but for people to go, if this person wins it, I'll be willing to enjoy it. But if this person wins, I will not.
Because then you're not going to enjoy it until the finish, right? Like, you should enjoy the story that they're telling. And if they tell a great story and Undertaker wins and it makes sense in the match, I'm not going to hate it. But
because I think like last year's Roman and Undertaker match, I can't verbalize to you how much I did not want Roman Reigns to beat the Undertaker, but I didn't not love it because of that result. I didn't love it because the story was, get out of my yard, I'm a dog.
Right. The story was terrible last year.
But like the other thing I was going to say is, so a lot of people were saying, you know, the match is going to be terrible. That's the kind of the, from the people that are saying they are not into the match, that's one of the big things that people were saying. So I was like, okay, let me think about it. And it's like, there's no part of me that wants to see this because I think it's going to be a great match. Like, one of my favorite matches of all time is The Rock and Hulk Hogan. Like, at WrestleMania 18, I remember watching WrestleMania 18 in the house, and Hogan was one of my favorites. And there's a moment in that match where Hogan is in the Sky Dome, and it's the first time in years he's been in WWE in a big show, and he goes for the leg drop. And I stood up in my living room and, like, was screaming. And everybody was going crazy. And that near fall is one of the greatest near falls for me in wrestling, because my childhood guy, for, like, 5 seconds, channeled the older guy and, like, did his thing. And he didn't get it done. And he lost, and he shook his hand, and it was great. So there's no part of me that's like, you know, guys, I mean, I know we had Okada and Omega, but I really want to see Cena Undertaker. Like, that's not why I want to see it.
They're two very different things. So, I mean, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura should be a great wrestling match. Undertaker, John Cena might not be a great wrestling match, but it could be a very epic encounter. This was the first time that encounter for me felt epic. And I guess one of the criticisms I can say is there's still not really a story to it other than that this is an epic encounter that people want to see, and John Cena has now called him out, right?
Like, he's not even here yet.
Because he's not even here yet, and there's really no, like, personal issue between the two of them as of yet. But I think for some people saying that the story, I don't know how you can say that the story isn't there for Undertaker Cena, because they're just laying the building blocks of a story now. And I think John Cena did really well on Monday to lay the building blocks of a story that could be really intriguing. Now, I say this all with some trepidation. Because remember when Shane McMahon came back and was like challenging and Undertaker was gonna be at Hell in a Cell, and I was all like, oh man, this could be really fucking good, and then it was terrible in the rest of the build to that match. So I mean, who knows? Like, yeah, could they fuck it up? They could, but they also have the chance to not fuck it up right now, and I really hope they don't.
Well, because what they're doing with Ronda Rousey has been great. And I didn't think that was going to be any good.
Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to say was, one of my favorite matches as a kid, and I know that, I think it was Scott Robertson, who's going through and watching old pay-per-views because he hadn't seen them before, had watched WrestleMania 7 not too long ago, and Savage and Warrior. Have you ever seen the Savage Warrior match from WrestleMania 7?
I haven't actually seen it. I've heard that it's like the best Warrior match there is, right?
I'll tell you what, we'll watch it in New Orleans together, because it's not that it's like, it's not a great wrestling match, but you've got Randy Savage, who betrayed Elizabeth to become the Macho King for 2 years, with Sherry in his corner, being devious and being heels. Warrior's the babyface, and it's the loser loses their career.
Okay.
And Elizabeth is in the crowd.
Oh, so I've seen that moment. Is this the sparkly jumper in the crowd?
Yes. Yeah. So, but that, like, nobody talks about that match being so great because of the, you know, nobody goes, did you see that plancha the Warrior did? Like, nobody talks about it like that. But something else I wanted
One of my favorite matches from NXT is Bayley versus Eva Marie. You know?
And I laugh because that I'm with you. I mean, because they took the fear that everyone had and turned it into a good story.
It's all about like highlighting performers in what they need to do in the moment. And wrestling isn't just about like technical wrestling matches. A lot of people love that. I fucking love that. You know, like, give me Drew Gulak versus Mike Quackenbush all day long. I love that stuff. But I also love bonkers chaos. And that's the great thing about wrestling, is the variety of it.
So the other thing I wanted to say, and this is because I know that AJ and Nakamura is a big one that comes up in comparison to this. I don't really understand why that's coming up as a comparison, because they're so different. But what I will say, and I'm looking forward to that match, let me just preface that right now. But what I don't understand is this: what a few people have said to me today is, well, you know, AJ and Nakamura, you know, that's what we want. And I'm like, but nobody's saying you're not going to get that. You're still, I don't understand if what it's, if Cena Undertaker was like, if they were like, okay, we're doing that instead of, then yeah, 100% get it. But the other thing is, for the people who are saying that this story isn't good, take a look at AJ and Nakamura. AJ has been booked horrendously as the world champion since December or November.
He's been the least important part in his championship story for the most, for the majority of this reign.
He's been the least important part of, you know, the story that he's involved in. He was background fodder to another storyline for most of the last 3 months. Nakamura is probably the worst booked Royal Rumble winner in a decade. So now the story is going to build in the next month. But if your argument is that Cena Undertaker doesn't work because there's not a great story there, well, AJ and Nakamura have been booked horrendously for the last 3 months, apart from the Royal Rumble for Nakamura. So. But you want to see that because you want to see those performers. So I just think that you can't, when it suits you, use the story's not very good when you want it to work for what you're trying to say, if that makes sense. Because somebody actually said to me, Aaron on Twitter, and it was a great point, because I'd said, you know, I hate people who kind of just shit on wrestling all the time and judge it before it happened. And he said, well, you did that with gender, so you can't. And I was like, that's a great point. But the difference with gender is, and I did say this on the podcast, well, first of all, we went up 50 Patreon pledges. I had to rant. People wanted me to do it. But every week I did say, Sandro, back me up here. I did say, look, I hope he proves me wrong.
Yep.
I really hope he does. Every week I'm like, please prove me wrong. Please prove. And he didn't. That's not my fault. Like, it's not, you can't blame me because he doesn't get any better. So I think that you can initially be like, well, that, you know, I have problems with this or whatever. But the problem with gender was a guy who I don't think was believable to be what the character they put him at, the level of performance they put him into as world champion. But the thing is, there's 14 matches in WrestleMania. If Cena Undertaker's not for you, there's 13 other matches. I'm sure there will be stuff that you will like. And it's, I guess there's a quiet majority who are into it for the most part at the moment.
Well, I mean, if you're Facebook and Twitter polls are any indication, it seems like most people are into giving it a chance. And even,
at least, yeah.
Like, even though I was... Even though in the moment, in you know, when I heard John Cena's promo, I was like, yes, fuck, I want to see it. Like, thinking about it a day or a couple of days later, it's like, is that really a match that I want to see? Still, nah. Like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about it. It's going to depend on the story, but I'm more intrigued to know how they follow it up. And I actually want to hear what The Undertaker has to say about John Cena. I want to know what The Undertaker's going to look like, if he'll have a motorcycle. Like, I am really kind of invested in that, because actually, that could be a great story. And, I mean, everyone's been saying it. He needs to come back as American Badass. I mean, Kid Rock is going into the Hall of Fame. Kid Rock is going to be at WrestleMania. It would make all the sense in the world, right, for him to come out to American Badass.
Can you imagine?
It'd be so good. Like, you, I know, I mean, there are so many people who hate Kid Rock and are probably so angry at me right now, but...
So, but like, imagine being me, who for the last kind of, you know, day or so, whatever, I've been defending this. Like, the pressure's on me here in a lot of ways, because if he comes out in the hat and the gloves and gongs and says, rest in peace, I'm going to look an absolute idiot and I'm going to have to eat my words.
See, and for me, even if he doesn't come out in the hat and the gloves, but if he does what he did at Raw 25 and he has just like the CM Punk gear, is what I call it, that's still not good enough for me. That's not enough of a change. I want a complete metamorphosis of The Undertaker, or at least some sort of reason that, like, I don't want him to say rest in peace. I don't. And maybe some people do, and they'll probably have him say rest in peace because that's The Undertaker's thing. And if they're building this based on nostalgia that I don't have for a character, but everyone else has for a character, then that's one thing. But I really think the story is going to be the most effective if The Undertaker left his hat and gloves and Undertaker persona as a whole at WrestleMania, and he needs to change, and he needs to be a badass, or he just needs to be a man. He needs to be more like Mark Calloway than The Undertaker for these purposes, because that's, you know, that to me was the whole point of John Cena's promo, was to humanize him and to bring him back. But I guess the intrigue of that story has me hooked right now. We'll see what they do in future weeks.
Well, and Raw's going to be in Dallas on Monday, and he obviously lives in Texas. The other thing is that I don't think that they need to do exactly what you're saying in terms of him having a complete metamorphosis. I think that'd be good if they did. But I think at the very least what they need to do, or what it seems like they are doing based on Monday, is they're not building this for the guy in the hat and the gloves to come out and say rest in peace.
No, not at all.
So if that is what happens, then you have very grossly misunderstood what people are thinking is going to happen. Also, though, let's go back to Raw. Any last words about that, though, before we move on?
I think one of the interesting things, just watching my friend's reaction to this whole segment and then me kind of explaining what was going on, I think that A, helped me get more into it because I was explaining the story and could explain that there was a story there, which proves that there was one. And it was just kind of cool to see my friend's reaction to going like, so story plays a really big part in this then. And I was like, yeah, story is super important to wrestling. And as we went throughout the show, you know, just kind of seeing him get kind of into the rivalries and the confrontations and that kind of stuff was really fun.
The last thing on Raw that happened, though, was there was a tag team battle royal to determine who's going to WrestleMania to face the Bar, and it was won by Braun Strowman. A lot of thoughts on this both ways. What was your reaction to Braun killing everybody?
I mean, I'm of two minds about it because I love the tag team division. Well, I mean, the Raw tag team division is pretty dire. I think it's unfortunate that they've booked the tag team division into the ground. I mean, the whole story has been the Bar beats everyone, right? And that just kind of continued to be the story. So it was funny watching Daniel's reaction when, who were the Bar facing to start?
It was going to be the Miztourage.
Okay, so they were facing the Miztourage and... You know, I'm a big Miztourage fan. I was like, they will not win this match because the Bar are the champions and they win and the Miztourage, they lose a lot. And so when all of the other tag teams started coming out, I think the Revival came out first and I was like, ah, top guys, I love the Revival. I'm so excited I get to see them. And then all of the other tag teams came out and there was a big schmoz and everything. Daniel was like just super confused. He had no idea who anyone was and he was like, what's going on? Like, there's a lot going on here. And yeah, it was just kind of a big brawl. It was kind of funny in the arena because everyone was just chanting for Rhino because, you know, he's from that area. So out of all of the people, you have Sheamus and Cesaro and you have Revival and you have Titus Worldwide and you have like all these wrestlers and everyone in the arena is chanting for my dear baby Rhino because they just love him. And that warmed my heart. But yeah, so then they set up this battle royal, which was interesting. And then I was going to ask you, did commentary explain why Braun Strowman was in the tag team battle royal? Or was it just Braun is in the battle royal because he's a force of nature?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the idea he doesn't have entered at WrestleMania, so he needs to find a way in. So let's go and kill everybody in the tag team match.
Okay. So, yeah, I was kind of curious. Like, when I saw Braun come out, obviously I was very excited because I love Braun. I was wearing one of my Braun shirts, like, Braun is my favorite, and I was just kind of like, why is he in the tag team battle royal? He's gonna kill everyone, and then he did. And so I guess I'm of two minds about it, because I love Braun Strowman chaos. I love Braun Strowman destruction. I love Braun Strowman just wrecking people. That's one of my favorite things about Braun Strowman, is just seeing him wreck people and stuff, right? So that part of me loved it, and I was absolutely cheering for Braun. I do have mixed feelings about him just wrecking the entire tag team division and making them look like shit, because I've always been of the opinion that tag team wrestlers working together should be stronger than most singles performers. Like, Braun is kind of a special case because he's Braun Strowman and he is a force of nature and he is the monster among men and he is going to just wreck things and people all the time because he's Braun Strowman, right? So I don't love the tag team division looking like shit, and it also... It's such a weird place for him to be at WrestleMania, because we wanted Braun to be featured, and I'm glad that he's not just in the fucking, like, Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, because he needs to be something more than that. But putting Braun Strowman against the Bar just seems like such a mismatch to me. It's odd. I mean, I'm strangely intrigued, just because it's not something I expected, but it left me with very confused feelings, I guess. How do you feel about it?
I don't really know how to feel about it yet, but I'm not against it because, I mean, I like the Revival, but they're not really right now being featured. So him killing a bunch of people, I'm fine with. I mean, I think it really more determines that your tag team division needs to change. And I don't mean, like, I don't think anyone's going, oh, if only Titus Worldwide and Rhino and Heath Slater were more prominently featured. I think they're just quite crap. Like, there's nothing wrong with being crap and just being kind of open and matched people. That's fine. But you know, I think that people need to kind of chill out a little bit. It's not like Braun Strowman came in and eliminated the Hart Foundation, the British Bulldogs, and the Brainbusters. You know, he put out a bunch of people who aren't really featured.
Which is, I would say, partially the fault of the show, though, because, I mean, the Revival, since they the Revival are the ones
that I would say are the exception. Maybe the Club as well, but the nerd thing is ridiculous. But I think what I like about it is that I really want the Bar to do something. I really want Braun to do something. And if you can bring that together, then great. I really do like the idea of Braun having to, like, the idea, and they will not do this, but the idea that Kurt Angle's like, I can't let you go out there at WrestleMania without a partner. And he, like, just grabs Kurt Hawkins, and Kurt Hawkins loses his losing streak at WrestleMania and becomes a tag team champion with Braun Strowman is, like, I can't even explain to you how glorious that sounds.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. That sounds amazing. See, I'm just guessing that Braun and Elias are going to be a tag team.
And it could be that, you know, there's people that you could do it with. So if they're going to make something fun out of it, like, fair enough. I mean, would I prefer Braun to be in something bigger? Yes, but the cards just haven't aligned that way. You know, they had to keep him back in case they needed him in the main event. I guess as long as the Bar kind of get to have a decent match with him, I think they will. I don't think that he's just going to kill them in 10 seconds. I think
it'll be good. I really do think it'll be a good match.
But you know, you do have, it's a 14 match card. There are going to have to be a couple of shorter matches. I'm hoping that's going to be the Cruiserweight in the US, personally. They're the two that I would be like, if you want to do your short stuff, do it there.
Yeah, but the Cruiserweight one could be really, really good.
Who do you want to be in the final of that, by the way?
So this is really tricky, because we know that Cedric Alexander is in the final.
We
learned that last. I know that you hate him. I like Cedric Alexander. He's so fucking good. Cedric Alexander versus Roddy Strong. Everyone check out that match. It was so, so good.
Why couldn't Roderick Strong go through?
I know. I wanted Roderick Strong to go through so badly. Like, I was pretty animated watching television last night. But I want it to be Drew Gulak, because he's my favorite, but also I'm completely in love with Mustafa Ali, so next week's gonna be really emotional for me when I see the two of them fight. Yeah, I think just Drew Gulak has been my favorite for so long that I still want it to be him. I want it to be Cedric versus Drew, but at the same time, we've seen Cedric Alexander beat Drew Gulak so many times that it's not a new matchup, because the whole time Drew Gulak was in the Zoe train and they were fighting against Cedric Alexander, like, Cedric Alexander just kept beating Drew Gulak. But this is a new and revitalized and freshly angrier Drew Gulak, so I think there is a different dynamic to the match for sure. So I guess that's okay. The one I want to see. But Cedric Alexander versus Mustafa Ali would also be amazing. And Mustafa Ali is, like, one of the best humans ever. So I love them both.
Before we move on from Raw, any final thoughts? Bear in mind, we are going to talk about the Moolah thing on SmackDown.
Okay. Yeah, so overall, Raw, I thought, was a super fun show. I did find the Sasha Bailey continued dissension kind of interesting, that Bailey came out with Sasha and then just kind of left and left her to get beat down by Absolution after the match and didn't come back out to save her. I think that they're kind of treading the line between, is Bailey going to turn heel? Is Sasha going to turn heel? I still think it should be Sasha. I think this reads to me as more of Bailey is standing up for herself and not letting herself be used by Sasha. And I'm trying to think if there was anything else that really stuck out on Raw. A lot of the stuff was really good. And I think just overall the experience of watching it with someone who didn't know wrestling but was really into learning about wrestling and getting into the storylines and, like, booing and cheering and having a good time with it, it was refreshing, because I wasn't watching it with that, like, analytical eye, I guess. It was just, like, I got to be enveloped in wrestling and just go for it, you know, and it was a good show too, which was helpful. So I really, really enjoyed Raw a lot.
So there you go. That's our live report of Raw from Sondra. This is the SmackDown summary. We are 54 minutes in. So we're going to take a brief break, because truthfully, we're recording this in two separate parts because we wanted to make sure that this got enough time. So we're going to go. Sondra's going to go meet her friend for some, you know, beers. I'm going to go get a steak, and we're going to reconvene in a couple of hours. So with that in mind, here is the music of the American Bass. This is the theme song that hopefully The Undertaker will commit to next week on Raw. I'm just building this up for it to fail. It's just not going to happen. But I have a week left to hope. So here's the American Badass. We'll be back on the other side of this to talk about SmackDown, which includes Shane McMahon getting beaten up by Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, Asuka and Charlotte, more build for the Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal. I assume Sondra may have some thoughts on that match.
Yeah, just maybe a couple.
So with that in mind, we'll be back. Here's the Undertaker in the meantime, everybody. See you soon.
Are you scared?
So we're back. That was the soothing sounds of Kid Rock singing American Badass by The Undertaker. Much to my chagrin, all of that music is not on the WWE Network's like 2000 archives. So I'm going to have to find a way for Sondra to watch the originals, because that music being butchered would just... I'm not willing to live in that world. So because
I love how unwilling you are. Like, I can get
by. You
know
what it was?
But...
I watched his... So there's a pay-per-view where he returns. And he basically debuts the badass thing.
Okay.
So I was like, I'll go
watch
it.
Like first appearance of motorcycle, are we talking?
Yes. And I'm expecting the American Badass theme. And instead I get, you're all gonna pay, no difference this time, which is one they had later on, but does not fit the time frame that they put it into. So for that kind of stuff, I feel like you need to see the real thing.
Which is fair, because I mean, entrance music in wrestling is very important. I mean, we know how you felt about the Godwins not coming out to Don't Go Messing With the Country Boy.
I mean, don't you at any point where there's an excuse want to hear Don't Go Messing With the Country Boy?
Well, of course I do. And maybe, you know what, maybe I wouldn't hate the Godwins so much if they had a better theme tune than the thing that, you know, is on the...
Because in theory, you should love the babyface Godwins.
Theoretically, I mean, they're hog farmers.
They bring live animals.
Terrible, and... Like, I guess I never really saw much of the live animal situation, though. It was always just, like, Phineas being awful.
Pretty much. But we're excited, though, because this is the first SmackDown, episode number 86 of our series here. The first SmackDown of 2018 that Sondra and I think agreed was a good show.
It was. And it wasn't... I don't even think it's just because the bar is so low for SmackDown right now. I think this was a genuinely good episode of a wrestling show. Like,
well,
I saw...
We just talked about
Raw, and I really enjoyed Raw, so I was like, well, at least I got Raw this week, and it was good. So, I mean, SmackDown will probably be terrible, and that's what I was expecting. And as I was going along watching SmackDown, and I had to watch it in two parts because I started it at like 4:30 in the morning and then fell asleep. But not because I was bored, just because it was like 5 in the
morning.
Classic
Sondra.
Classic me, right? Because this is what I do. But when I woke up, turning on SmackDown again immediately in the morning was not like this torturous thing like it normally is. Because normally I'm like, oh, don't want to watch SmackDown. That's part of why I didn't start it until so late, because I was doing other stuff. And I was like, SmackDown's not been a priority for me lately. It just hasn't been, because it's been an awful show. So I just kind of put it off to the last minute and then watch it and then complain about it. And then, you know, we move on with our lives. But this episode of SmackDown was actually very enjoyable, and things happened and I had feelings about stuff, which is my main complaint about SmackDown as of late, is that, you know, nothing was really making me feel anything other than anger toward Shane McMahon and Dolph Ziggler existing.
But also the problem before was none of the storylines were appetizing.
Mm-mm.
None of the... Whereas now you go, okay, WrestleMania's coming up. I mean, I thought this was just a great episode of SmackDown. Really, really top-notch. So anyway, so the show opens with AJ Styles coming out. He comes out and talks about, you know, the odds were against him after Cena put him through the table. But, you know, he believed, and he had to suck it up and believe in himself. Talked about his long road to get into WWE, getting to WrestleMania, getting to be champion. He's earned it. He talks about Nakamura. Nakamura then comes out. he addresses AJ as champion, that everyone likes him, that everyone likes him too. And at WrestleMania, dreams would come true, and his dream is a knee to the face, and he'd become champion. And then that brings Rusev out with Aiden English, which is going to parlay us into a AJ and Rusev match. But what did you make of the opening promo? This is the first time now that we're seeing AJ and Nakamura together in the program that we know it's going to be for WrestleMania.
I think this opening promo was fine. It was very much still AJ Styles being king of exposition. And it being at the beginning of the show, I still didn't have high expectations for this episode of SmackDown because I am familiar with SmackDown and how it's been. So it just kind of seemed like another opening segment where AJ was talking. But Shinsuke Nakamura coming out and facing off with AJ, I think is still pretty cool. It's a cool visual to me. And now that we know we're getting that match for sure, they can finally start to build a story. I think there was more interesting stuff with Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles later. The opening segment didn't do a ton for me, but I thought it was fine. And I think Shinsuke Nakamura has kind of been adorable lately when he's just like, you know, knee to face and I will beat you at WrestleMania. And I've been enjoying that dynamic of Shinsuke Nakamura because adorable, weird Shinsuke is kind of great. Like, I like when he's being super adorable and weird, and also when he's kicking the shit out of people in the ring. When he's being, I don't know, made to have long talking segments, I don't think it works, but it was fine. I was very surprised when Rusev and Aiden English came out, though, because, like, I don't know if they had advertised Rusev versus AJ, or if I just wasn't paying attention. Either one is possible, but I didn't expect them to be interrupted by Rusev and Aiden English. And then I got really excited because I was like, oh, this is not something that I expect. Rusev, you know, being in this mix is kind of cool.
Yeah, do you know, it's interesting because I was talking to David on Facebook actually about an hour ago and we were just typing back and forth and he was like, oh yeah, like the Cena Undertaker thing is a better story right now than Nakamura and AJ. But the thing is, everybody wants to see Nakamura and AJ as a match, right? Mm-hmm. That's the one that, you know, everybody's seen it before, Wrestle Kingdom, blah, 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 blah. I don't know if there's anything they can do for me that's going to make Nakamura and AJ's build be like, oh my God. I think they'll have quite a simple build to the match, but it's really all about the match.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, it's different to a lot of the other matches on WrestleMania. We were talking about that when we were just discussing John Cena versus Undertaker. AJ versus Shinsuke is going to be very much about the match and about the match quality and wanting to see that as a dream match on a WWE stage and on a WrestleMania stage. And I think that's a fine build. You can have an exhibition match like that. It's not necessarily going to click as much for someone like you who's like really heavily invested in character and story. And that's the kind of stuff that's more important to you. You know, someone like me who loves character and bonkers story stuff, but I also love really just like great technical wrestling and I'm really looking forward to the match. Again, wrestling's a variety show, so I appreciate that we're getting a little bit of everything.
Yeah, so I mean, it's fine so far. I mean, I assume the whole story is going to be them kind of like, you know, playing nicey-nice to each other. I'll be honest though, I think I might want AJ to win.
I might too. I don't know. I'm undecided.
I don't know yet. I mean, there's three more SmackDowns and stuff, but like right now I'm like, I don't know if AJ win would be the better thing. But anyway, that takes us into AJ versus Rusev. They go about 14 minutes. Very good match. Rusev gets a lot of offense in. And then after the match, Aiden English runs in for the DQ, causes it. And then Nakamura kind of stands and lets it happen for a little while, but eventually runs in, makes the save, and he kind of stares at AJ as he walks by. Fun opening match though.
Really fun opening match. I loved this. I would be very well up for more AJ Styles versus Rusev, please. Like, if that could be a program, I would not be sad about that at all. I think they worked really well together. Obviously, they're both great, so they were going to have an excellent match. I kind of almost like that it was a DQ instead of just a standard finish, just because Alexander Rusev's been losing kind of a lot, and he just lost to Shinsuke Nakamura, and I like that they maybe want to protect him a little bit because he... It gives me hope, right? Because everyone's still chanting Rusev Day. Rusev is the most popular act on SmackDown. And
also, if they to defend the company, I don't know if they do have any plans for him. The one defense you could say and not really doing anything with him right now is, well, he's not featured in WrestleMania.
Right.
So you don't want to really put the emphasis on him too much, but then maybe the night after or the SmackDown after is where you pull the trigger on him.
But still making him look good, which I think they did in this match. I think he looked excellent in this match. He wasn't going to win. Of course he wasn't going to win, but...
being the buffer guy for AJ and Nakamura is not a bad place to be.
No, you know, for right because now. He's mixing it up with the main eventers of WrestleMania. Like, I mean, by main eventer, you know what I mean? Like one of the five main events or whatever. Someone who's in a world title match at WrestleMania, if Rusev is still kind of in that mix, then that's good. He might not be like the guy who's going to be champion, but at least he's kind of up there and he's not just languishing.
Yeah. Then we get a Kid Rock video about him getting into the Hall of Fame. Styles and Nakamura have a segment backstage where AJ walks up to Nakamura and says he didn't need his help. Nakamura said it looked like he did, but not to worry. He'll help him anytime until WrestleMania, and then he would beat him with a knee to the face and then walks off. So Nakamura's playing some mind games with AJ.
I love this. I absolutely love this because Nakamura and AJ, like you said, there's not a ton of build to this, right? And I did listen to more of the Raw rundown in between when we recorded last and now. And so I heard David say that, you know, to be fair, they haven't really been able to build AJ and Nakamura because they still had that championship match at Fastlane. So they couldn't say like AJ was going to retain for sure. So you can't really start building a story with a challenger and a champion when you don't know who's going to be champion, even though we kind of knew who was going to be champion. But they can't say that, right? Because then what's the point of the title match at Fastlane? So,
but the sale of Nakamura AJ, though, is these two are the best. This is happening for the title.
And we want to see them face off.
Yeah, whereas even Asuka and Charlotte or Undertaker, Cena or whatever, a lot of these other programs, they could really, really do great if the story is good.
Yeah.
Whereas if the story, like Asuka and Charlotte technically could be a great match. Undertaker, Cena could be great in a spectacle kind of way. But those two stories need to be really engaging to the audience in order to have the feel, the good vibes going into it. Because if Asuka and Charlotte keep going the way they're going and have these kind of great confrontations, then you want to see it. You're excited for it. Whereas if it's been a flat build, you're kind of a bit like, yeah.
When I would say the Asuka Charlotte build is similar to the AJ Nakamura build, just in the sense of it's two people who are really great. It's babyface, babyface. It's a clash you want to see. And with AJ and Nakamura, they have fought before, but not in WWE. And right? They've never had a match.
They've been involved in matches together, but they've never had a one-on-one.
Yeah, like they've tagged match. Or they've been in like triple threats or, you know, that kind of thing. But they've never had a one-on-one singles match in WWE. And with Asuka and Charlotte, they've never actually fought before. They've never had a singles match. So there's an intrigue to that, right? Like that itself is a selling point for the match. I would say that AJ and Nakamura, though, I kind of like the aspect of Nakamura helping AJ out and AJ having a little bit of a chip on his shoulder because Nakamura has been kind of coming up to him backstage and trying to fuck with him and saying, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania. I'm going to put my knee in your face and you're going to lose. And that would probably get under AJ's skin, right? Like, even though it's friendly and they're pals and they know each other from previous companies and traveling in Japan and that kind of stuff. But it would still kind of get to AJ, especially when he's been the least important person in his own championship story this entire time. I can see where AJ as a character might have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder about that and be like, no, I need to fucking prove myself as champion. So I like the fact that Nakamura has been goading him and goading him and goading him. But now he's like, no, but we're still friends and I will still help you up until WrestleMania when I beat you and put my knee in your face. And he's still just kind of digging and still just kind of poking at AJ. But it's an interesting wrinkle to me. It doesn't have to necessarily, like, building to a match, especially like this, where you're just really looking at the match itself as something you want to see, there doesn't have to be a big, huge personal issue. You know, you don't have to, like, kidnap someone's dog and then fight over that for, like, every single match to be important, right? I just realized that that was actually a storyline back in the day.
I was going to say, have you been watching ahead?
I have not. I have not. Yeah, oh boy, when we get to that, I'm sure, but
I think you're right. The other subtlety that's nice is that Nakamura's saying this stuff and it is kind of heelish, but then it's not, but then he saved him and there's tension between them. And I think that's a good way to play it.
Yeah. And I think building tension can take different forms and I like what they're doing. And I kind of like that it's subtle. I like that it's not just in your face. Now I hate you. Now someone has turned heel or someone is, you know, such a good guy and this person's awful. And, you know, because I love bombastic characters who are, you know, super villains and heroes and that kind of stuff. But I also kind of like a match between two guys who are really, really good at wrestling and have tension between them. And they both want to prove that they're the best. You know, AJ wants to prove that he's better than Shinsuke. Shinsuke wants to prove that he's better than AJ. Shinsuke wants to win his first title and he wants to win it specifically from AJ. It's not just about the title. It's about this match and this situation. So I think they're doing well to build the tension. Even if it's subtle, it's working for me.
So we get shown pictures of the Bludgeon Brothers attack on the Usos in the New Day. Turns out that only Jimmy Uso and Big E are cleared. They do a backstage promo where they basically say they're going to fight together. They come out. Big E
during this backstage promo, like when Big E was talking, He's really great at talking, by the way, and should definitely be a championship contender at some point. But having Jimmy Uso just come up to Biggie Langston backstage and be like, and call him Oos, and they join forces, I got chills a little bit just because of all of the history with the New Day and the Usos. To see them, like, they sort of have had this mutual respect thing for a while, but to see them joining forces was really cool to me. I don't know if I'm just, like, overblowing that in my mind, but it seemed big moment.
I think that what's so great about it is that, you know, what the story they're trying to tell, and I'm happy with it so far, is they were going to have finally a classic match on the main stage of a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I know they had Hell in a Cell, but you know, work within the system. And the Bludgeon Brothers ruined them having a classic, so they ruined them building their legacy together. So they're pissed. So there's a reason for them to team. You know, it's not just like. Like, if this hadn't happened, there'd be no sense in these guys teaming, but it makes sense. Anyway, they jump Harper and Rowan before the bell. Then we get the match. It's just Harper and Rowan kind of going crazy. In the end, Harper hits a big boot to Jimmy Uso. Rowan takes out Biggie on the floor, and then they had a double team powerbomb for the win. Afterwards, they annihilate Biggie and Jimmy Uso. So I've got one slightly negative, the rest positive. So I think they're telling a decent story so far. In this, and I think the Bludgeon Brothers attack was good, and I like the fact that they beat up, you know, one of the New Day and one of the Usos, because it's, you know, they're not a coherent team, right? They're two people stuck together.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I think they need to get rid of the mallets. I think the mallets are what's kind of like every time it's taken me out, because if they're this badass kind of spooky team, that's fine. But it's like the mallets are such a kind of like a prop that you can see them go like that. You need to stand this cue so you can see the mallet and over the shoulder. And the mallets just don't work for me. So I would prefer if they got rid of them, because I think apart from that, I think it would enhance the Bludgeon Brothers act to the main fan base.
See, I feel like you're right in terms of the main fan base, and I think it could help the
Bludgeon Brothers. Not in terms of Sondra.
Be taken more seriously. But in terms of me, there's very little I love more than seeing Jimmy Uso and Biggie Langston with chairs and then having the Bludgeon Brothers hit those chairs with big mallets. Mallets versus chairs, Kenny. I loved it. I loved it so much. It was so fun. I mean, I don't think you're wrong in terms of mass perception of the Bludgeon Brothers. I think getting rid of the mallets would probably help them look like a more serious team, because they do look ridiculous, and you're not going to bludgeon someone with these big hammers. Like, it's the same problem I have with Triple H's sledgehammer. It's
because they did a great beatdown, you know, that mm-hmm. was really impactful. But then as soon as they pick up the mallets, it's comedy. I think it's a campy comedy, kind of, you know, 60s horror, but it's like, ooh,
it's campy in exactly the way I love it. But I totally understand your point. What I really liked about this match, though, I love that Jimmy Uso and Big E went after the Bludgeon Brothers right away, because they know that the Bludgeon Brothers are a team. They're a formidable team. Like you said, Jimmy Uso and Big E are not used to teaming together, so they need to take their shot. You know, like, they need to take their shot right when the Bludgeon Brothers come out. And normally I'm not a big fan of babyface teams attacking heel teams right off the get-go, just because that seems like kind of a dick move to attack someone during an entrance. But in this case, it makes perfect sense to me, because the Bludgeon Brothers took out their brothers, right? They took out Xavier Woods, they took out Kofi Kingston, they took out Jey Uso. And I think Jimmy Uso and Biggie Langston have a right to be pissed about that, because they took out, you know, their teammates. They took out members of their family. And so it makes sense that they together would be pissed at the Bludgeon Brothers for, you know, ruining their classic match, yes, but also ruining their family and their chances for WrestleMania, because who knows if these guys are going to be cleared, right? Like, what if they're super fucked up and they can't even fight at WrestleMania? What's going to happen then? Obviously in story, but I liked the aggression from them, because why would they wait in the ring to just, like, wait for the Bludgeon Brothers to come and bludgeon them? They wouldn't, because they'd be pissed and they'd want to go after them. So it gave the match some intensity right from the beginning. And then I was wondering if it was just going to be a brawl and a DQ, because as soon as they started getting chairs out and using the mallets and, like, kind of beating each other down that way, it almost seemed like we weren't going to get the match. But then we did. We ended up getting some of the match, and we didn't see a lot of it. A lot of it was during the ad break, which was unfortunate. But I really liked what we saw of the Bludgeon Brothers working with Jimmy Uso and Biggie Langston, and I would love to see more of it, because I was curious how you were going to feel about this, because when we recorded right after Fastlane, I know that you were not on board with the Bludgeon Brothers being involved in this match as a triple threat situation, and I was more on board with it because I thought it added an interesting dynamic. I wanted to see if the Usos and the New Day had to team up against this big monster threat, and what they did on this show just kind of reaffirmed everything that I wanted from the story. And I was wondering if the story is working better for you now that you've kind of seen where they're going with it.
I think that it's very hard to, I think that doing the Usos and the New Day would be just huge. Classic of all time at WrestleMania, and I think you'd remember it for like a decade. So I guess I'm more hung up on triple threat probably means not an absolute classic. But I tried to go into this with like an open mind. I enjoyed the majority of what they did for the first week. I liked the idea of them, you know, beating up Jimmy Uso and Big E. I think that the thing that's going to be frustrating for me is that if they drop the mallets and cut some promos of their own about similar situations, you know, like, I think that would be great, but I don't know if you can really do that with the current character that they're in. So I think it's between now and WrestleMania, it's kind of going to be this like race to, can they fit in with these other two teams who have these really intense issues and make it better, or is it going to not be as good because they have to have their mallets and be scary? So I think they did a really good job this week. I enjoyed the segment much more than I thought I was going to. So I think the Bludgeon Brothers did well. And I want them to do well. That's the whole reason I'm kind of kicking up a fuss about it, is I'd like to see them do well. And I just think if you're going to WrestleMania and, you know, the Usos and the New Day's whole thing has been about, you know, getting chances and da-da-da-da, the Bludgeon Brothers have to kind of come in with something of their own as well. They need to bring something to the table. So, but I in terms of what they did on this show, much better than I thought it was going to be.
See, and that makes me happy. Like, I'm glad that it worked for you because it worked for me on every level. And I think it seems to be...
Also, just a note that, like, sometimes, even if you're not totally keen on something, maybe give it a chance.
Yeah, maybe go in with an open mind and kind of see what happens. I mean, it's good to hear that, you know, I knew that, well, I know you, like, you're going to give it a chance because you want to enjoy wrestling, but...
I'm not Wade Keller.
Exactly. Well, you really hung up on him. But
and it's actually not even him, because he's like a nuanced guy, which I can understand. Like, so like he was talking about, you know, when Charlie Caruso came in and said, your mic's still on Monday to Alexa and Nikki. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, you know, I really think that she should come in and say the camera's still on, you know. But he was like, the segment really suffered because of that. But the other guy, Travis Bryant, who was on the show, to me is just, he's like, he didn't like anything. He thought that his ideas were better than everything else. And, you know, he's got this, like, East Coast cast where he's... There's nothing worse than when you have a podcast, I think, that thinking that your opinion is better than everybody else. I spent probably 2.5 hours today chatting back and forth with people who liked the Undertaker match, didn't like it, because I care about people's opinions.
Yeah.
And I think as soon as you become the sort of person that's like, I have a podcast, therefore my opinion is better than other people, then, you know, it's the beginning of the end. Anyway,
well,
I mean,
having a podcast is like... I mean, it's probably good that we don't think our opinions are like higher than anything else, because you and I disagree plenty, and like David and I disagree plenty, and you and David disagree plenty, and that's part of the fun, is hashing it all out, I think. And that's what, I mean, I think about this whole Bludgeon Brothers, New Day, Uso situation. I think it's really interesting that it didn't work for you so vehemently, and now maybe it's, you're kind of coming around on some of it. For me, I'm just like all in. And one of the other things I realized about it is if we just got New Day versus Usos, it would be another babyface versus babyface match with a build, kind of, because, you know, it's not the same as Charlotte and Asuka or AJ and Nakamura, because we've seen New Day and Usos so many times. But I think it would suffer as being a classic just because there are so many matches that we've seen from them. And it would also, like, the build might suffer in terms of SmackDown storytelling as a whole, because it would be another, like, we're building to this really classic match because we always have really good matches. And if there are already two title matches that are being built that way on SmackDown, I think the Bludgeon Brothers kind of inject a different flavor into that story. And that's part of what I like about it as well.
My worry for it is that whenever WrestleMania is coming up, I actively would love everyone to steal the show if they can.
Right.
And I think that with the Usos and the New Day, the reason that that was more my preference is because it's a story that's been going on for months and months and months and months and months. It's very easy to relate to, blah, blah, blah. With the Bludgeon Brothers in there and you put a third team in it, it can just kind of dilute the idea, right? Mm-hmm. Which the issue is that I think the Bludgeon Brothers need to become fully formed characters in the next 3 weeks for it to feel special with them involved.
That's fair.
Which I think is what I hope happens. So Sami Zayn's interviewed backstage by Renee Young. She asks who
he blames. By the way, you mentioned the whole Nia Alexa thing. I don't think I mentioned that when we were talking about Raw.
No, you didn't get a chance to mention it.
So just real quick, because I know we don't have like a lot of time when we're talking about SmackDown, but I fucking loved watching Nia Jax wreck everything. I'm not super big fan of this whole body shaming angle that they're doing with Nia and Alexa. Like
I'm okay with a body shaming angle if it is being done by a heel and the end is that the baby face gets their comeuppance. That right. I'm okay with that, because I think that there is that thing sometimes we kind of go, well, because like you notice that they will never use the word fat.
No, they won't, and they shouldn't. My issue, part of it though, is that it just screams of lazy writing to me, especially after we saw the Alexa Mickie James feud be basically about you're old.
Dave Meltzer had a great line, actually, that I thought you would like, where he said, this reeks of men writing for women.
Oh, and that's Kay Furey said the same thing on Twitter. This reeks of men writing for women who don't understand women and how women talk to each other. I mean, I have a pretty interesting solution that seems just completely radical. Maybe they should hire women writers. Maybe that would help. Maybe women understand how women talk to each other. I don't know. I mean, that sounds crazy to me, but it seems like something that needs to happen.
The thing is, and I don't mean this in a sexist way, the WWE political cycle is difficult, and it's been pretty male dominated in the past, because I don't think a lot of women would put up with the sort of shit that they need to deal with in
WWE.
Because
they can get better jobs where they're treated not like shit. And so maybe they should examine that corporate structure.
Kate, who does that, you know, the sections of how much women's wrestling is on the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, she seems lovely, but I mean, I can't imagine she'd last more than 2 weeks in WWE, because you know, her whole thing on social media is, you know, championing change and championing all this kind of stuff. And then you'd kind of have to go into this corporate structure. You need to learn how to play the game. Anyway, but yeah, they do need female writers. You are correct.
But
anyway,
yeah, so that just kind of bugged me. But it was, I did enjoy seeing Nia like wreck the locker room. And my friend Daniel that I was with absolutely loved Nia. He thought she was so cool. He was like, she is such a badass. And he was just like super into her. So it was just interesting that like she and Sasha and Braun kind of made the biggest impression on him as someone who didn't know anything about wrestling.
And also, I think what's really good about Nia is she's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, bigger shaped people, men or women, like Vader, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, whereas, like, Nia Jax is hot.
No, Nia Jax is absolutely hot. And it is also kind of upsetting that, you know, you have Braun Strowman and Nia Jax on the same show, and their build started very similarly, right? Like, they were doing jobber squashes, and then they're the big dominant monster, and they haven't won every match, but they're still built to be big monsters who wreck everyone. And it's like, Braun Strowman is a big scary monster and he can lift ambulances and flip trucks and, you know, do whatever Braun Strowman does. You know, he's insane and he's fucking lovely and I love him. And the big woman monster has to cry about stuff because she's insecure. Like, that just kind of is a little problematic for me. It doesn't bother me as much as some other people because it seems like they're going somewhere with the story, and I really do want to see Alexa Bliss get her ass kicked. But
also, Nia Jax can do anything. She got the Enzo thing over.
Oh, she's amazing. And she's playing her part super, super well. So mm-hmm. Props to Nia.
Anyway, so Sami Zayn's backstage with Renee Young. She asks who he blames for the failure of Sunday. He initially blames Shane McMahon, but ultimately it's Kevin Owens. Shane's obsession with him and costing him the title, and you know, if Owens hadn't been such an egomaniac, Shane wouldn't have been at ringside. I liked that basically Zayn put the blame on everybody but him.
Of course he
Classic.
Did. Of course he did. And you know what? He's not entirely wrong. He's not entirely wrong at all. Because Kevin Owens started this whole beef with Shane McMahon, right? Like, Sami Zayn got involved when he pulled Kevin Owens off of the table and cost Shane McMahon Hell in a Cell and all that kind of stuff. But that really started with Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. And so Sami has a point. He's making the point in an incredibly dickish way. But another thing I really like about this segment is that Sami Zayn is fired up about having lost, and he looked pissed. He looked pissed that he lost the championship. And he obviously...
You should when you do not win
you
titles.
You should react mm-hmm. to loss. That is part of losing, is reacting to that and making it a big deal. Like, he wanted to be the champion. He's never been a champion in WWE, and that was huge for him. And now he doesn't get to do it because of Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon and their beef, right? So I love the fact that he came across so well and so fired up about it, because it should fucking matter.
It should. Charlotte comes out next. She says that when you're a champion, there's always a target on your back. But when Asuka's music hit on Sunday, she knew what it meant. She was honored. Asuka comes out. Charlotte welcomes her to SmackDown Live and says, careful what you wish for. Asuka says, thank you. Charlotte goes on to talk about, you know, she's defending the title all over the world, and that when she sat ringside and saw Asuka win the Royal Rumble, she wanted her to challenge her because she loves competition. But, you know, Asuka's never faced anyone like her before. And then Asuka said, you are the queen, but I'm the empress and I bow to no one. And she tells Charlotte that she chose her because she likes a challenge and no one's ready for Asuka. This was great. I really enjoyed this. I thought they really got over what they needed to get over very quickly. Charlotte is a champion who's kind of been tossed aside and not really thought about. So she wants the Asuka match. And then Asuka sees Charlotte as her only real challenge right now. So it works on all levels for me. How about you?
I loved this. And I know I give Charlotte Flair a hard time, a lot more than most people, about not sounding human in promos. She actually sounded human in this promo. She sounded like she believed what she was saying. And I think that's so helpful. And so when she's coming across well, I think that's great. And all of a sudden, doesn't Charlotte Flair seem like a big damn star all of a sudden again?
Mm-hmm.
Like Asuka challenging her and making it very clear that challenging Charlotte because she wants a challenge, she sees Charlotte as a challenge. She's never faced her. And I think that's part of the intrigue behind the story is, and why I didn't want it to be Asuka versus Alexa Bliss. Not just because this match is going to be better, but also because we've seen Asuka versus Alexa Bliss and it was fine, but it wasn't great. And it would just kind of feel like, okay, so we're just building to another Alexa Bliss loss to Asuka. We've never seen Charlotte versus Asuka. We've never seen that happen. So could she break Asuka's streak? Is that a possibility? I don't think she will, but the possibility seems there a lot more than
the questions in your mind.
If the question's in your mind, then they're doing something right. And this match to me, Kenny, I don't know how you feel about it. This feels as big as AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura to me. I am so fucking pumped for Charlotte versus Asuka.
I was talking to Ollie earlier on tonight and I said that what to me is really great about this WrestleMania. So I think this year's card blows last year's card out of the water.
I agree.
But I think the thing that's great about it is that there are literally 6 or 7 main events.
Yeah.
For everybody, you get the mixed tag, you get Taker Cena, you get Roman Brock, you've got AJ Nakamura, you've got Charlotte and Asuka, you've got the whatever the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn thing is going to be. You've got the IC title. Like, there's all these matches that just feel big. And I think that's the, like, this year's card feels so big that I forgot at one point that we have Asuka and Charlotte. And when I remembered, I was like, oh my God. Like, that's one of the ones that you're like, oh, we get that as well?
Like, there's just so much. There's just so much going on.
And like, people will complain about it, but I am going to get to that building. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to enjoy the shit out of that 7 hours.
Oh, me too. We're going to be together, so
I'm not going to go, oh no, the show's going to be really long. The pacing is what's going to make or break it, you know? And that's I think what's another thing that's great about WrestleMania this year is how the fuck do you pace that show?
Because everything feels big. It doesn't dross. I mean, I guess the Battle Royals are.
I mean, I don't think Nia and Alexa is going to be that great a match. I think it's probably that to me seems like the one of the matches that will suffer, you know, probably like 9 minutes and just kind of just there. Mm-hmm. But with this, you know, this to me is going to be edgier seat stuff because I think they could make me fully believe in that stadium that Charlotte could be her.
I think so too. And if they get the time to do it, which I'm guessing they will. And how cool is that? That, I mean, Asuka as winner of the Royal Rumble feels like a bigger deal than Shinsuke Nakamura as winner of the Royal Rumble, to me anyway.
But that's because the storyline has been using her win to the story.
And they're still treating her with care, you know? Like, Asuka feels like a big deal every time she comes out. Asuka was on Raw, and I didn't know if she was going to be on Raw, and she was. And when she came out for that match, or, you know, to confront Alexa and Mickey and whatnot, like, I was just so pumped that I got to see Asuka live because it felt like a big deal. There's an electricity when she enters in the arena, and she's this, you know, adorable tiny woman who will totally, totally murder you, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just part of her appeal. And I fully believe that she could totally, totally murder me. And she's such a badass. And Charlotte Flair is tall and gorgeous and athletic as shit and a great wrestler too. And I think the two of them could put on such an amazing, amazing match that the story of it is very simple. Like, you haven't faced me. We'll see who wins. And sometimes that kind of story is enough. Like I said, this story feels very similar in build to AJ versus Shinsuke Nakamura, but this one's working better for me for some reason. I don't know. I like both of them, but this is the one I'm looking forward to most at WrestleMania.
And that's great. I mean, like, because people keep saying to me, what match are you looking forward to the most? And it's like, I don't really have a clear answer, because it's all like part of a great meal, you know? Like, yeah. We could have, you know, we talked about the Taker Cena thing. I don't know if you've ever been in an arena, actually. This is going to be interesting. I don't know if you've ever been in a stadium or whatever where you've seen two people face off and it's like two different parts of two different generations. Like that, so. one of those big moments, you know, they have. You've got that. Roman and Brock had a great match at the last WrestleMania they had, so I'm sure they'll do it again. The mixed tag should just be a big slice of WWE entertainment, which could be great. AJ and Nakamura could be the best wrestling match in the US of the year. And then Charlotte and Asuka are going to have probably the best women's match in WrestleMania history. Probably. I mean, I'd be surprised if they didn't. So there's just so much. So much.
You know what? I would love to see Asuka and Charlotte beat Shinsuke and AJ.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see it too. And I think there's a chance.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in the end, Randy Orton comes out. They're doing this weird thing where like somebody else interrupts. And I was thinking of you, because I was thinking, I know that you like when like worlds collide and stuff like that. But I was just like, why is Randy Orton coming out to interrupt this?
Yeah, because they did it last week with Bobby Roode coming out to kind of interrupt the Charlotte and whoever segment.
Riot Squad.
Charlotte and the Riot Squad, right. And with Bobby Roode, it was like, oh, that's her mixed match challenge partner. So I guess they're just sort of doing a nod to that. But yeah, this week, Randy Orton coming out. And I was like, I was well into the Charlotte and Asuka confrontation. They didn't really have anything more to say. So it's probably good that they got cut off and interrupted before it just went too long and went off the rails. But of course, you know, my standard reaction to Randy Orton is boo Randy Orton. So I was like, hey, fuck you. Like, I was enjoying Charlotte and Asuka. Why are you here?
So then we get Orton doing a promo, talked about, you know, he's been called many things, but he's now been called US champion. He's a Grand Slam winner. You know, he's going to WrestleMania. Then Bobby Roode comes out. Bobby Roode said that he's entitled to a rematch and he wants it at WrestleMania. And when he regains his championship, it would be absolutely glorious. He's the most boring babyface I've ever seen.
He's terrible.
Jinder comes out, does a big fake congratulations to Orton, tries to stir things up with Orton and Roode. And then we get a match with Jinder and Bobby Roode, which goes about 9 minutes. It was fine. It did not really do anything for me. But in the end, Sunil Singh tried to offer a distraction when Bobby Roode was up to the top. And then Jinder crotched him, hit the Colossus for the win. After the match, Randy Orton came in, hit an RKO on Jinder, celebrated with the crowd, and that's that. So I guess this is our WrestleMania program with these three guys. Can't say I'm hugely excited about it, but I did like the, you know, Orton doing a promo about like the US title meaning something to him. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I mean, he still looks kind of dead behind the eyes, but at least he's saying words that indicate that he cares about being a Grand Slam champion. He did have a good line where he said that being on the list of Grand Slam champions is the only list that matters to him. Which kind of made me laugh against my will.
I think that, I mean, the fact that if I was Randy Orton, I would be dead between the eyes thinking that I've got Jinder and Bobby Roode at WrestleMania, you know?
Oh, 100%. Because this isn't great. I will say that Jinder Mahal as world champion did not work for either of us, right? Jinder Mahal as just shit stirrer kind of works for me. I thought it was kind of funny that he's just coming out to stir shit between Randy Orton and Bobby Roode for essentially no reason. I mean, he's not even really mentioning the list anymore. The list is still super stupid and doesn't make any sense. But now he's just, you know, he wants to stir shit between people because that just seems like a good time and maybe he can get himself inserted into the title match picture. So, and he does have a claim to be in that match, right? Especially now that he's beaten both Randy Orton and Bobby Roode. So if Bobby Roode's going to get a rematch, why wouldn't Jinder also be involved in that? The storytelling on paper makes sense. It's just, you know, like, it does feel slightly more interesting now that Randy Orton is champion. And, you know, I have to begrudgingly give Randy Orton props for that just because it's not on Bobby Roode anymore. So,
I mean, for me, you know, you can talk about all the stuff at WrestleMania you're looking forward to. For me, the Cruiserweight one and this are the two that I'm just kind of like, if they weren't on the show, it wouldn't bother me.
See, whereas the Cruiserweight one is very near and dear to my heart.
But then, you know, I've not really seen any of these Mustafa Ali promos, so maybe if I watch them, I'll get more invested.
I think anyway, you would. I really think you would.
It's 2:41 a.m. so we need to move on.
Yes.
Kevin Owens is interviewed about Sami Zayn. Kevin calls himself the rightful WWE champion, blames Shane for not having the title now. He called Sami Zayn a liar, that he tried to trick him into believing he would lay down for him. He said Shane was like every McMahon, he couldn't handle it on the spotlight, tried to steal it, and he would personally show Sami Zayn the error of his ways and how Shane was pulling the strings. So, we're getting hyped throughout the night that we've got a Shane McMahon WrestleMania announcement, and we've got Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens apparently not on the same page. So I thought it was a good build all in with the three different things to hook me for the main event segment.
Yeah, for sure. It was. And Kevin Owens also seems very fired up about losing and not being the champion. Kevin Owens calling Sami Zayn a liar and a manipulator is pretty damn rich, though, right? Kevin Owens, who has turned his back on his friend, been a terrible human to everyone. I mean, not just Sami Zayn. He also turned his back on Chris Jericho. We know that Kevin Owens is a piece of shit as a human being. And so for him to call Sami Zayn a liar and a manipulator was just like, it was peak Kevin Owens because he's so delusional about his own self-worth and grandeur. But I liked this because, again, there was emotion behind it. And there's the dissension between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens is very interesting. And Kevin saying that this is all Shane McMahon's fault, I'm not inclined to disagree because I think Shane McMahon is the worst. You know, I'm kind of, again, on Kevin Owens' side. I'm more on Sami Zayn's side than Kevin's at this point. But it's interesting. And again, he's reacting to the loss and reacting to the story that they're telling, which makes me more interested because they're interested in the goings-on of it.
Yeah, and I guess what works for me is that I totally understand why Shane McMahon got involved because he got kicked in the face. But then I understand why they're super pissed because they didn't mean to kick him in the face. So everybody's
and
got their own motives.
And also, he shouldn't have been out there in the first place, which was
exactly
Kevin Owens'
but they've
point.
But they've all got a motive, and that's what makes it so good.
Yes.
Because when everyone's got a point, then you need to choose about whose point you think is being made better or whose point you want to believe. So it's good. Then we get the video package for the Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal. We talked about it in the Raw Rundown. I know it was announced when you were in Detroit at the show.
I hate this. I don't hate that there's a Battle Royal. I love that there's a Battle Royal. I think that's fine because a Battle Royal allows more one-on-one storytelling for female matches. If you want to get everyone on the card, this means that the match between Charlotte and Asuka isn't going to be a fatal five-way like most SmackDown title matches were for so long, right? You can have a one-on-one match for Raw and have the rest of the women in a Battle Royal. And I think that's great because then they get on the WrestleMania card and it means that you don't have to have promo trains with people inserting themselves into stories and people can make the Battle Royal seem like a big deal. I fucking hate that it is named after the Fabulous Moolah. And I did listen to your and David's discussion. So you kind of went into why the Fabulous Moolah is incredibly problematic as a person. If they were just focusing on the Fabulous Moolah as a character in WWE and saying,
oh yeah, they tried to make it hard as a person. That was a problem. But I do. Let me just say this. I like, as I said in the road, I don't like it at all. I really don't. It's one of the more icky things that I don't really want to have to talk about. But I was talking to a friend tonight about it, and in terms of WWE's history and the way they've told it, I don't know if there's anybody else you could have named it after, because if you're always talking about, you know, the narrative that they tell, I'm trying to think about this in a different way. The narrative that they tell you is that the Fabulous Moolah held this belt for 27 years and da 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 da. So it would be kind of baffling within their own narrative if the Battle Royal wasn't about her.
Well, if you look at that though, I mean, the circumstances behind her holding the belt for 27 years are also problematic.
Oh, you know,
she never allowed anyone else to hold it.
But then also, you know, every year we're seeing cancer survivors and people who survived, you know, becoming paraplegics, whatever, are being called warriors because they're warriors like the Ultimate Warrior, who was quoted at a rally saying queering doesn't make the world go round, called Darren Draws a cripple and wished that Bobby Heenan's cancer would eat him alive.
Oh, I mean, he's incredibly problematic too. I am no fan of the Ultimate Warrior.
I know you're not, but I think that what I'm trying to say is I understand that there's different nuances to how people feel about things. Like, if you buy an Ultimate Warrior retro toy, I don't necessarily think that means that you're endorsing the Ultimate Warrior as a person. That's fine. The problem with the Moolah Battle Royal is I get narratively why it's made behind her, and I don't really know who else it could be behind, because as much as people would like to say it, a China Battle Royal would be ridiculous. because
I don't know. I don't think that's a bad shout.
I don't really think she was in the women's division. She was a great pioneer for women in different ways, but I just don't think that she would fit. I think it has to be somebody with a long, long, long legacy. Sherry maybe, but then Sherry, people remember her more as a valet than a wrestler. I think there's just a problem.
She was still an influential woman in wrestling, and as a company, I feel that it's, you know, yeah, maybe Moolah was more influential in wrestling as a female wrestler, but David Bixenspan actually wrote an article for Deadspin, and it made a very good point that this video package, and when I was in Detroit, I actually went to the toilet when I saw Moolah on screen because I was like, I just don't want to hear her be honored. And also, I really had to pee. So it seemed like the perfect opportunity. So I missed the Battle Royal announcement. I had to ask my friend that I was with, like, what did they announce? He's like, something about what's a Battle Royal? Because he had no idea. But the narrative, because I watched the full video package when it was on SmackDown, and the fact that they're calling Moolah a trailblazer for women and a pioneer in women's wrestling is absolute bullshit. And David Bixenspan made a good point when he said, you know, women's wrestling might not have been at the forefront of wrestling, but Moolah took it back. Moolah was very much about, like, low athleticism, hair pulling, that kind of stuff with her girls, and that's how she trained them. So if anything, Moolah was almost more a proponent of, like, diva-style wrestling, quote-unquote.
I mean, for me, I don't have any problem with the character of the Fabulous Moolah in terms of, like, kayfabe. Like, I actually, to be honest, get quite a kick out of her.
Well, in kayfabe, her character's not bad. I mean, like, I like Psycho Sid, and he's a reprehensible human.
Yeah,
but...
well, I just love the idea. Like, I remember when I was first watching wrestling, and one of the first videos was WrestleMania 3. And one of the matches in the show is the Junkyard Dog against King Harley Race. And King Harley Race is with Bobby Heenan and the Fabulous Moolah. And she's like 62 years old.
Right.
And she's got these big glasses on that have dollars on them, diamante. Like, how am I not going to love that? She gets battered in the late 90s in the Attitude Era and stuff like that. So, but I think that you should be allowed to, I'll use myself as an example, right? I think I should be allowed to get a kick out of the Fabulous Moolah character, still be able to enjoy it, but at the same time feel incredibly uncomfortable that there is a battle royal named after her, given all the stuff that she did to women.
Yes. And I think that's...
Does that make sense?
No, I think that's a very valid way of looking at it. And I think for me, the problem isn't just naming something after her. It's naming a battle royal that's supposed to be, you know, a showcase of women in wrestling, and then saying that it honors the legacy of the Fabulous Moolah. I mean, the legacy of the Fabulous Moolah is pimping women out, forcing them to perform sexual favors against their will, not taking care of them, taking parts of their cut. That's the legacy of the Fabulous Moolah. That's not something I want honored in the wrestling business. She was a terrible person. And so it's problematic for me, especially because they are trying to portray her as such a trailblazer for women's equality. No, she fucking wasn't. She was not a trailblazer for women's equality. She set women back with how she treated them. And so if the narrative that they're telling, promoting the Battle Royal, is not about the Fabulous Moolah as a character with the dollar sign glasses and being in her 70s and...
Which is what I would want it to be about if you are... If it has to be about her. But
yeah.
I do want to ask...
And I would prefer it's not about her, but finish
your thought, but at the end of it, can you also tell me if you are going to be able to enjoy the Battle Royal in spite of this aspect of it?
Okay. So if the Battle Royal has to be named after her, which I definitely prefer that it's not, then I wish that in the video packages they weren't making her out to be some sort of saint in women's wrestling. I think that's what bothers me the most about it, and what I find the grossest about it is that they're also saying that they're honoring this woman's legacy when her legacy is not one that I support at all. And they're not talking about the kayfabe legacy of her. They're talking about...
The woman Lillian Ellis,
which they got her name wrong in the video package. Did you notice that they said Lillian Ellis? Like
the thing I find her as a person fascinating. Like, I'd love to study.
She's absolutely fascinating
because, you know, she came from nothing. You can see in the way that she dealt with people that she was always keeping everything close. Like, I would bet that she was super insecure.
I'm sure. Because, I mean, people who have to lord their power over other people like that, a lot of times that comes from a place of insecurity. You know, she was exerting power and control over the women that lived with her.
So do you think Is there a way for you to be able to enjoy the Battle Royal in spite of it being named after her?
Oh, yeah, because even if it's named after an absolute cretin, I support the performers who are in it 100%.
I feel bad for them because I don't know if you've seen, but there's a lot of tweets today. So basically, Carmella has a match with Naomi here, and Carmella gets a pretty good win, actually. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest win of her career for the last 6 months. And, you know, she was quite clever because she, when Naomi was going for a springboard, Carmella makes her lose her balance, pulls her down by her hair and rolls it up. So she was dastardly about it. Mm-hmm. But like, there's an inset promo where she's like, I'm the new Fabulous Moolah. And I'm like, please. Like, I feel sorry for people like her or Ember Moon or Ruby Riott who, like, they have to tweet out about it and they have to be like, oh my God, I'm so honored. And that to me is the toughest part because imagine having to, you know, put that out of there.
I mean, well, I feel like I some of the tweets that they were showing looked kind of like, because I think it might have been Ruby's, I can't remember, but someone was like, the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal? Like, yeah, sign me up. I really want to win. And they weren't tweeting about loving Moolah. They were tweeting about wanting to win the Battle Royal or being glad of the fact that there is a Battle Royal so they're going to get on WrestleMania. And I think there's a very fine line there because if they're going to call it the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal, then, you know, it is unfortunate for the performers because I'm sure a lot of the performers feel the same way as I do about the, you know, quote unquote legacy of the Fabulous Moolah. A lot of people know that she was full of shit. I mean, there are two interviews, I think, with like Sherry Martel and Luna Vachon and people talking about Moolah. You and David mentioned the documentary Lipstick and Dynamite, which is one of my favorite documentaries. And there's a very clear tension between a lot of the women and Fabulous Moolah. Everyone wants to
say that was how I found out about all the stuff.
Oh, was
because
that?
When I watched that documentary, going, why is there so much, like, tension? I couldn't understand it. And then I read up more and I was like, oh.
Because they don't really delve into it. I mean, they have a couple of the women interviews say that, you know, Moolah was bad to them. But they skirt around the issue. They don't go into it in depth in that documentary.
It was definitely going to be these two. I'm happier that it's the Mae Young Classic and the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal because I'd rather... If you're going to celebrate her, which I'd rather you didn't, I'm happier that what she's associated with is the past.
Yes.
Whereas the Mae Young Classic is the future. Mm-hmm. And I don't want the future to be tainted with that woman's name.
I mean, I genuinely hope they change it for next year. I know that they're not going to change it for this year, but I hope that they change it for next year. And I know they might not.
The only way they're going to change it is just, but, you know, Forbes have written an article about it. But I mean, this kind of stuff is when you really see how niche WWE is. Because if this was like a main sports outlet, they would be crucified.
Oh, 100%.
So, and listen, I feel bad.
This is the company that put Mike Tyson in their Hall of Fame.
True. So. But even, you know, Vince McMahon was told by his dad, you need to take care of her. So I get it. And the thing is, it's very difficult when somebody's an old person to be angry at them for stuff that they did when they were younger that you were never around for. Mm-hmm. Like, it is difficult, I guess. But at the same time, yeah, she's a cretin and she... there's enough people that say this stuff that I believe it because, like, Sherry Martel got on relatively well with her, I think, at points. And Sherry Martel was a big success. So... It's not like it's just bitter people who didn't make it that are talking about it. It's a variety of people who were in various points. So
yeah, and I think when it comes to naming the Battle Royal after someone else, like maybe there isn't someone else that seems so synonymous with the legacy of wrestling. But I think it's better to choose someone like Sherry Martel or Luna Vachon or Chyna. Like I like Chyna. I know that the company probably sees them as problematic, or even Miss Elizabeth, right? I know the company probably sees it as problematic because they died from drug-related deaths and whatnot, and they don't necessarily want to publicize that. But it's like, really? You're shying away from publicizing that or the fact that Chyna did porn, and you're promoting the Fabulous Moolah who did all sorts of unspeakable things? Like, it's all just really interesting what the company sees as, like, the line that they want to draw. And I just think that if you're going to honor someone, then it shouldn't be such a terrible human.
I'm with you. So yeah, Carmella gets a win over Naomi, which is quite good. I think the Battle Royal is probably going to do Carmella quite good. You know, because you get people now, I guess, like Absolution, probably Sasha and Bayley, Carmella, Naomi, Natalya, Becky Lynch, and all. They've kind of got a purpose now. So, mm-hmm. You know, there is that, which is good. But I want to talk to you, Sandra.
Yes.
about the main event segment, which I thought was sensational. So Shane McMahon comes out. We've been hyped up all night. He's going to have a big WrestleMania announcement. We don't know what it's going to be, blah, 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 blah. So he comes out, shows the footage from Sunday, says hello to everybody, and then he kind of retells the story of him and Kevin Owens. And he's like, you know, I was about to get my revenge. Sami Zayn came out. I've made a lot of decisions that were unbecoming of a SmackDown commissioner.
True.
So he says, after tonight's show, I'm going to take, as SmackDown commissioner, I'm going to take an indefinite leave of absence.
And but there before, was much rejoicing.
Yes, but before I do, I'm going to make one match for WrestleMania, and that's Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn. Because, of course, that's what he would do on the way out, because he's recognizing that he needs to go, but he also wants to stick it to them one last time. So he does that, but then Kevin Owens comes out, and he's, like, applauding Shane's idea to leave. But then Sami Zayn turns up, and then Zayn's kind of saying, you should have, you're just doing this because you heard the crowd's reaction to us fighting at Fastlane. Shane says he doesn't understand them. You know, he's given them an opportunity in the biggest show of the year. They can't be bothered to appreciate it. And then basically Owens and Zayn attack Shane. Shane gets a few punches in, but Zayn hits him a haluva kick. Owens hits a pop-up powerbomb. They go outside. He gets a pop-up powerbomb, sorry, another powerbomb onto a piece of equipment. He gets a chair put on his neck and smashed off the apron. He gets powerbombed through some sort of equipment backstage. Shane's making very weird gargling noises.
The noises were very disturbing, and also his face was as red as that equipment.
But talk me through the segment, what you liked about it, what you didn't like about it, and just your general thoughts.
I mean, this was a roller coaster of emotion for me, because Shane McMahon is coming out to make a WrestleMania announcement. Boo, I don't like Shane McMahon. I don't want to hear him talk. I am annoyed. I think I even texted you, like, because we were about to record the SmackDown summary and I was just finishing the show. And I was like, well, Shane McMahon's on my screen. I bet you can imagine how happy I am about that. Rah, rah, rah. And then you're like, I think you'll be happier in a second. And I was like, oh, indefinite leave of absence, you say? Elation, happiness, joy. Now I'm so excited because Shane McMahon is leaving. And that's exactly what I want because I do not like him. It was like for one moment, Shane McMahon wasn't the worst. He actually examined his actions and the fact that he's been bullshit for months and was like, you know what? I'm not equipped right now to be the commissioner of SmackDown. I have been making poor decisions and I have been getting myself involved and maybe I should step back from that. And that, you know what? I applaud Shane McMahon for that decision, not just because I want him to leave, but because that takes some self-discovery and growth as a person, right? I can applaud
Flawed characters are the best of characters.
Exactly. Flawed characters are the best of characters. And so this was great. And then it was weird because he said that Daniel Bryan was coming back next week and some of the people in the crowd were chanting no. And people pointed out on Twitter because like they wanted to see him there that night and he was going to be there next week. So I kind of get
Can I tell you something that I'm quite interested about?
Yes.
So going into this, I was thinking it might be, you know, a triple threat with Shane and Owens and Zayn. I think Owens and Zayn are going into this as a team.
Do you?
I don't think they're breaking up. But my question becomes, who would Shane's partner be? Now, there's two options that have been bandied around, which I do not think would happen. Number one would be Vince.
Oh, gosh.
I just think that I love some McMahon family drama. I mean, that Kevin Owens thing with Vince was great. But I just don't think that Vince is not at a stage in his life where he could do that. I don't think.
And he hasn't been involved in any of this story either. I mean, we saw him on Raw, which was rare, mm-hmm. but he seems but more I, involved I, so, in the Roman Brock Lesnar situation than anything going on SmackDown.
Yeah, so he's a rumor, and then Daniel Bryan, the rumor's always that he's got cleared. But the thing I don't get is, because this is obviously building something with Shane, Zayn, and Owens.
Yes.
If it is a tag team match, I cannot, I've got nobody. Randy Orton's doing his US title thing. They've not switched Rusev over yet. That basically takes care of your babyface side on SmackDown. Not really any big babyfaces on Raw who are not doing anything. So I'm just kind of, is there somebody they've got as Shane's partner who we're just not thinking about that is going to be a big name? I don't know, but
my worry is that they would just make it Dolph Ziggler for no reason or something.
Oh, no. But the thing that was so great about this angle was, you know, I was going to go, oh, he's going to announce the triple threat. Oh, he's going to leave. Oh, he's making Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn. Oh, they're beating him up. Oh, they might be still together. So there's all these questions.
See, coming out of this, I get the feeling that we might get the triple threat.
But that's great that we don't know. And we're both kind of like, what?
And because Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens had obvious dissension backstage. And I don't think that was necessarily a ruse. Commentary played it off like that might have been a ruse, like they were playing us and then they were going to team up against Shane McMahon at the end. I think that dissension is real. I think Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are upset with one another. But I think the greater evil is still Shane McMahon. I mean, that's why Sami Zayn turned in the first place, right? He had problems with Kevin Owens from the get-go. But the greater evil was Shane McMahon holding him down and not giving him opportunity. So they're teaming up against the worst situation. And I think that that could still lead to a triple threat at Mania. I don't know. Like, but again, questions are great because I don't know what's going to happen. And also, I'm really intrigued to see what Daniel Bryan has to say about it next week. And I have not been intrigued to see what any authority member has to say about anything in a while. So I think maybe the dynamic with Bryan could be kind of interesting. It's definitely revitalized it for me.
Oh, yeah, it's, the feud's definitely revitalized. I thought the angle was excellent. I thought Shane played his role tremendously in this.
Even if because, he was out of breath giving a promo, but yes.
Even if he was out of breath, yeah, because, you know, like you say, he finally, it was almost like he had to do what he did on Sunday to realize, oh, fuck, I'm not doing a good job anymore.
And that takes a lot of growth, right? Like, I mean, we just saw in Chikara, Mike Quackenbush has been getting involved in more stories and stuff, and he's not the director of fun anymore. Like, he appointed Bryce Remsburg the director of fun so he could be an active competitor. I kind of like that as a dynamic, and that makes Shane McMahon a lot more likable again. Like, Shane has been the worst for a long time, and I'm not saying that I love Shane McMahon now and that I want to see him back, but it's more goodwill from me, at least.
And I think I'm happy now that they have, because this Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens thing has been going on since like SummerSlam, and I think it should be blown off at WrestleMania. And I think it will be good. You know, the thing is, last year Shane had my favorite match at WrestleMania.
That match was very good. Shane and AJ were great together.
So
even
I
if
have
his
faith
punches
in
are
it.
Awful, but
his punches are the worst of anybody I've ever seen. But yeah, this for me, this revitalized it. I'm excited because is it a tag team thing? Is it a triple threat? There's various options that could work. So,
McMahon making the match Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, that also just kind of sparked something in my brain where I was like, they're not in the Battle Royal for sure. Because we know it's going to be something, right? And
there's no way they're in the Battle Royal now.
No, and the reason I almost don't think they're going into it as a team is just because of the dynamic of Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. When one of them makes a match, that match is made, right? Like, And I wouldn't doubt that Shane inserts himself into that match in some sort of capacity, but I think he might stick with Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, and I think Daniel Bryan will want to honor that just because that's the directive that Shane put forward.
I'm actually going onto the WrestleMania website right now just to see if it lists Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn as one of the matches.
I'm curious because Shane made the match, but then Kevin and Sami seem to protest it. So it still does feel very up in the air for sure. And not up in the air in a sense of like, oh, I don't even care at all. Like, I actually care about this. And that's a testament to the storytelling on this week's episode of SmackDown, because I did not go into this week's episode of SmackDown wanting to see any dissension with Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are officially listed as a one-on-one match at WrestleMania.
Excellent.
At WrestleMania, the Yip movement may completely implode when Sami Zayn goes one-on-one with his best friend Kevin Owens. So, it's great stuff. I'm going to give this episode a big old thumbs up. This is my favorite episode of SmackDown in a long, long time. I finally feel like we're on a road to good stuff. I didn't feel bored during the episode. I'm into all the programs they're doing. So, yeah, big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, no, big thumbs up for me too. I mean, the only downsides are the Fabulous Moolah announcement, which I'm not a fan of, and Naomi versus Carmella was kind of nothing, but at least it gave Carmella a win and she was on TV, so that's, you know, kind of fine. It wasn't egregious or anything like that. And most of the stories I'm super into, and, you know, even a week ago, I was not that excited about anything on SmackDown. Even watching Fastlane, I think I said I was more excited for Raw the next night than I was for anything SmackDown was doing on WrestleMania. And after this episode of SmackDown, now I'm kind of intrigued for the WrestleMania build on the way to SmackDown. It seems like they're actually paying attention and telling stories. And I hope that they take this little delicate flower of SmackDown that's not terrible and let it flourish until WrestleMania into a beautiful fleur-de-lis instead of just killing my dreams next week. Because I still don't trust SmackDown, but I'm hopeful.
Whose theme song would you like to play us out?
I think that's tricky because there's so much going on. Should we play...
Do you know what?
What should we play? You choose.
Given the fact that he took a fucking... He was murdered on this episode. We'll play Shane's music.
We will play. And you know what? It's a cracking theme tune. Much as I don't like Shane McMahon, I love the song.
Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can get the fast lane review of Sondra and I for about 85 minutes. This has been a 2-hour SmackDown summary, maybe the longest one we've ever done. But been good discussion, I think.
I think so. I mean, stuff happened. It's nice when stuff happens and there's actual stuff to discuss and we're not just despondent going, I hate SmackDown. So get in touch with us. Let us know what you think about the episode. Let us know what you think about the stories. I'm on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Kenny's on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And you can get the brand at Inside_TheRopes.
There you go. She's nailed it as she always does. Sondra, do you hear that?
What's that, Kenny?
Here comes the money.
Here comes the money.
Money, money, money. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talks.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. Ching, ching, bling, bling. Got the chatter. You ain't talking money, then you're talking no matter. Ching, ching, bling, bling. Patting pockets. We take the dollar, dollar. Can a damn soul stop it? Here comes the new kid on the block. Hold on, your bets, here's where the buck stops. See, first of all, I'm stepping out on my own. About time I elevated to claim my own throne. Success in my blood, call it homegrown. Pours reeking testosterone. Power and money got me crazy cocky. No longer need you, Poppy. I know you're mad because you can't stop me. And if you wonder how this player done scooped your honey, I think she smell my cologne, it's called brand new money. Making major moves, man, ain't a damn thing funny. Pimpin' hood rats to playboy bunnies. They see the
money, 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 money.
They see it.